Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2.
Pokemon, get to the day!
Today is November 23rd, 2025, and this is GameBuy Podcast, Episode 187, Episode IPOM, Pokemon Review, taking a look at one of our very favorite series of game, Pokemon, and how it has fared over the last 9 years or so since we last took a focused look at the series as we revisit episode 116, originally published all the way back on July 19th, 2016, in GameBuy Remake Project episode 12.
Missing number?
I should warn you ahead of time, this episode, as denoted by being episode IPOM, is predominantly a full episode, but for the aforementioned focus discussion, which this week we will be having a guest on to help us dig deep into, and as such will be presented on its own as an additional episode. That, of course, being episode 187, episode Burmy, which should be available to you following the Thanksgiving holiday, wherever your podcasts are served.
Okay, wait. Okay, I know that we have to get into the episode. We got a lot on our plate here for this Thanksgiving season, but episode Burmy, really? I mean, episode Beedrill was right there.
Episode Burmy? IPOM and episode Burmy. It's, I promise, it's the way forward.
Oh, gotta catch them all.
All right. Well, with that having been said, welcome once again, each and every one of our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuy.org video game podcast.
Wait, listeners?
Yep. However, what show are they listening to?
GameBuy.org video game podcast.
Very good. Today, we're going to revisit one of our favorite later episodes that we actually, at the time, had used to launch a sister show. We're going to use this opportunity to discuss our experiences with recent releases of the Pokemon series, as well as to highlight some of our favorite sub-games within the series, and talk about what we'd like to see from future iterations as we follow up on how the last 9 years or so have treated this beloved franchise since then.
I just have two things to say. First of all, Sure. Damn girl, like, I can't imagine having multiple podcasts anymore. Like, we were really hustling. And also, I plan to talk about Sword and Shield again, even though we literally did an episode focused on those games. So,
yeah, no, I feel that.
Sorry about it.
That was a generation I really liked. And I really actually am eager to revisit some of these recent generations and talk about them now that we have put a few years between us and, for example, Sword and Shield.
Indeed.
Additionally, this week we would like to sort of
honor,
mourn a little bit. We want to dedicate our episode to the memory of Rebecca Heineman. Rebecca passed away this week. She contributed tremendously to the industry, particularly including, but really not limited to, the spaces on which our show is focused. Our hot hearts and thoughts go out to her family and loved ones in this difficult time. We are going to link you to a lovely memorial post over at gamesindustry.biz.
Gamesindustry.biz.
And I really do feel the need to note the obligatory fuck cancer.
Indeed.
Yeah, it has impacted my life. I know it's impacted the lives of some of our listeners. Obviously, it has impacted the lives of the people who go and create these crazy things that we devote so much of our time to. Absolutely fuck cancer. That's a lot we have here on deck today. So we will get into that. But first, let's get started, relax, and talk about some games news. Slaggy, what is the way that we rhyme?
PKO, hear it on the radio. Anyway, all right, so to start things off, a lot of folks have been very excited about this surprise that Valve has sprung on us. And I don't know, maybe not too much of a surprise if you're following industry insider secrets or whatever, but...
Well, yeah, so we had talked, we knew Valve was going to be announcing something.
Yeah. So Valve has announced three new Steam hardware devices. Well, the first one is just a controller, but that's still hardware, right? So it's not a new console, but it is a Steam controller. It will have next-generation precision magnetic thumbsticks, full-size controls, trackpads, gyro, or hero, and grip buttons. And they note that you can, quote, play all the games on Steam wherever Steam is. So basically very similar to what you have with a Steam Deck, but, you know, put it in a controller form factor.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear that it's going to use the magnetic Hall Effect style thumbsticks.
Yes.
It is, of course, you know, the broad understanding that that really dramatically reduces the stick drift that you often will experience over time. I'm a big fan of the control interface on the Steam Deck, so I am more open to a Steam controller than I think I had been in the past, now that I've really spent some time with effectively a, you know, portable console version of one.
Yeah, I mean, you'll be able to hook it up to your PC and your Steam Deck and maybe eventually your Steam machine. I'm not talking about the third-party computers from about 10 years ago that went under the Steam Machine branding. This is a first-party console. It is a small GameCube, not to be confused with GameCube, that will be running Steam OS. We don't know anything about specs officially yet, but the estimates I've heard are kind of maybe like closer to something like a Series S. So like not like top of the line, but definitely sounds like it would be very sufficient for many people's purposes.
Yeah, you know, I got a Steam Deck dock. It's been a few years now because they've been around for a few years.
Steam Deck dock.
And playing a couple of older retro games on my TV set that way, even at the time I had been thinking like, man, this is such an easy, relatively seamless way to play PC games on my TV. I wish Steam would make just a little box for this. And lo and behold, now here we are. By all accounts, it appears to be a beefier piece of hardware than the Steam Deck is. And the Steam Deck already performs pretty well in that you know, usage case. So I'm pretty excited for this. I have previously noted that I recently got a new PC, so I might not be in the exact target market right now, but this is definitely something I'll be keeping my eyes on moving forward.
For sure. And I mean, like, I recently got a gaming laptop, so kind of same, but also sometimes you just don't want to sit at your computer desk or whatever. Like, you might want to just chill on the couch or the chair or whatever and see it up on the big screen. And, you know, big screen mode? Why can't it? Big picture mode.
Yeah.
Big picture mode works great. I mean, even if you're just honestly using it on like a, on a computer, like it still is very nice interface. So.
Absolutely. And then you said there was a third one?
There is a third one. It is the Steam Frame. This is a VR headset that will be running Steam OS and will play all Steam titles. So even if it is not a VR title, you can still play it. So I can imagine a lot of those, maybe not much longer because of the current situation with gaming, but those adult visual novels so that nobody knows that you're, you know, watching some illustrations doing the nasty.
Yeah. Well, and one real key piece of information here about the Steam Frame, and I can appreciate this might be lost on you because I know you're not really a VR enthusiast, but it actually will have two different like display modes effectively, right? Like it will have a dongle that will allow you to stream from your PC, but it will also have enough hardware on board to actually run games itself, similar to the Oculus Quest 3. So this is really aiming to be sort of a both market device, because right now that's really kind of the paradigm, is that you're either doing your VR rendered natively in your headset and then you're running kind of a lower spec machine by, you know, definition, since it's, you know, all contained in the headset, or you're farming out, you know, the visual generation to your PC and then streaming it to your headset. And this is going to do both in one, and we'll have, you know, this bespoke wireless dongle to allow for, you know, good transfer speeds wirelessly. I think it sounds really good for the VR enthusiast market. I think there's a real, almost a need for this device to be executed at a high level and not be under the Meta branding. To that end, presuming they can bring it in at a price that I can afford, this is a piece of technology that I would likely go out of my way to get, because I do think it actually fulfills an important niche while not being tied to fucking Meta, whom I don't want to be giving additional cameras to inside my house.
Indeed. And I mean, you know, I can't do VR. It gives me headaches. But for those who can, the fact that it can stream titles and run things on the Steam frame itself, you can call it Hannah Montana. You can call it Hannah Montana because it's the best of both worlds. There is no release date information officially or prices officially. Valve did say they are targeting early 2026. To me, that kind of suggests that if they're looking at an early 2026 release window, that they've got to have some pretty decent stock built up at this point, and, you know, just kind of working on logistics at this point and seeing their production pipeline, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, the way they've been talking about it, it sounds like this hardware already exists in some form. So I suspect they're deep in testing slash have already produced a fair amount of stock, like you suppose. I'm very excited for the future to come in this regard. It feels nice to be able to be excited about something in the future. Fingers crossed that things go to plan.
Indeed. What else you got for us?
Yeah, we have a pretty wild interview here. This was run via the New York Times, who, as a broad platform, I'm really not a fan of. But mm-hmm. I have to say, you know, noteworthy news is noteworthy news. They firsthand had a interview with the CEO at Roblox. And the thing is, we've talked about this in recent weeks. Roblox is at the point now where they're getting, you know, 25 million concurrent users. Like, this is just a truly absurd number of concurrent users, daily users, like just an absurd number of people are playing this game, basically. And
the size of a population of a metropolitan area.
Well, yeah, precisely, right? And, you know, we've talked in previous weeks about how they really haven't done enough to protect the children that are logging in to their children-oriented game. The title of this podcast interview is "We Asked Roblox CEO About Child Safety." It got tense. I'm not going to summarize their whole discussion. I'm not going to summarize this whole article. The thing is, basically, I read through this entire thing. I haven't listened to the audio version because, frankly, I think it would make me
angry,
incandescent with rage. Angry is correct, but I needed something a little bigger, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, for me, indie rock band The Mountain Goats on Blue Sky had a really incredible take that basically summed up the entire CEO's approach. And that's really what I wanted to point out to you, because I think it saliently both summarizes and editorializes as needed.
Indeed.
And this was posted by The Mountain Goats over on Blue Sky. Roblox dude's interview crash out. The thing he wants to say but can't is, at scale, kids are gonna get hurt. That is the price for scale. The thing nobody wants to say out loud is, maybe scaling to a level where harm isn't manageable is bad, and scale should be contained. You know, right now, as they, certain forces within our government are trying to really regulate voices questioning capitalism, there is a certain degree to which I'm actually needing to watch my language while I say, you know, what I'm trying to say. But in the broadest of senses, I think I'm on record that, yeah, if your game is getting so big that you fundamentally view it as impossible to protect children, then maybe you should stop having such a big game. Like, handicap your own, limit users, do whatever you have to do, but like, why the fuck is making more money more important to you than protecting your users, whom are children? Like, even if they weren't children, you should still be protecting them. But like, it just feels like a societal rot that we're all just allowing it to be normal to prioritize money over protecting users, including children.
Yeah.
It was just to see it laid out so naked by the CEO is why, to me, this is really noteworthy, even though I'm not necessarily a fan of the Times. That's a funny statement.
Right. Capital and lowercase t?
Right. Precisely. Did you have anything you'd like to add on that?
No, I don't want to go on a rage-fueled rant, so I think I will...
There's a lot of that in the air.
Yeah, I think I'll take us to greener pastures. In fact, the greener pastures of Hyrule Field, which appears to be the setting of three recent stills shared by none other than Miyamoto-san himself from the upcoming Legend of Zelda live-action movie. Like, I know that we're getting very excited about literally just three pictures, but so far, so good. I mean, it looks pretty. It looks like, you know, the outfits look good. I can tell, you know, they're going for, like, you know, not, like, obviously, like, young Link, like, child Link, but, like, you know, Link and Zelda typically are meant to be, like, in their late teens. So, you know, seems like the casting is great. Yeah, like, I want more. I am ready for May 7th, 2027.
Yeah. You know, it's my understanding that there had been something of a set leak and that they were basically doing this to get ahead of, like, press, like, shots that obviously would be presenting us with our first look in a non-optimal sense. As a result, you know, I've heard a lot of people note that this doesn't really seem flashy enough to have been our first reveal. I think that's a fair assessment. But for me, I actually feel like these three photos tell us a lot. For me, Zelda's outfit, for example, looks heavily inspired by the Breath of the Wild look. The Link outfit looks very inspired by, like, Twilight Princess. The posture that Zelda is posed in these photos implies that she's, like, either teaching Link how to use a bow or, like, showing off her own proficiency with the bow or hunting.
I mean,
I actually really feel like we're getting a lot of vibes from these photos about the setting that I think a lot of people are really overlooking because they're looking at it as, oh, I thought we were going to get a look at Zelda monsters or this or that. And to me, I'm like, wow, I actually feel like we got a lot of information about the Zelda movie from this.
Yeah, well, like, very clearly, they, you know, obviously aren't going to announce any, like, subtitle for the movie, but it's very clearly Link's Crossbow Training, the movie.
Ah! That's the thing that, pretty funny.
That sounds very, like, weirdly specific to me as a lifelong Zelda fan, is, like, someone might be like, oh, literally, it's just a green field and hills, but, like, literally anytime I see hills like that, with, like, just rolling hills covered with trees, like, I always, anytime in the real world, I'm like, those are totally Hyrule vibes. Like, I'm not even joking. So the fact that, like, I have seen locations in the real world and strongly associated them with Zelda, like, I'm like, yes, this is Hyrule.
No, though, I get it, because Breath of the Wild changed my brain chemistry. I was playing that game when I went to Japan, and I was looking over, like, you know, Mount Fuji and stuff, and like, in my imagination, like, thinking about, like, what would it be like to jump off that and then pull out your little, like, the hang glider and glide off, you know, because Breath of the Wild had just had such an incredible sense of freedom where if you could get to a tall enough point and jump off it, you could glide anywhere. And it changed my brain chemistry. I was looking at everywhere like, wow, you could hover from there to there, I bet.
Indeed. And I'm like, ooh, I wonder if off in the distant hills, there's a little cave with a moblin who's like, it's a secret to everybody.
Yes. That's what Miyamoto intended.
A man behind a waterfall saying, let's play money-making game. Anyway, we said way more than most people might say about three photos. So what else you got for us?
Yeah, this is the announcement of a new game out of HoYoverse. This was a 31-minute gameplay trailer released this past Thursday for Varaspora. This is a horror game. It is presented in an anime realistic aesthetic. It does look to be in the same vague gameplay mold as some of their other releases, while also being a little bit more of like a mature or dark aesthetic. I'm excited for this in the context that I think everything that Hoyoverse does is, how do I say this correctly? Everything they do is like trend setting. So I think if we're seeing this come out of them now, we're likely to about to see sort of a wave of these almost like control-inspired, more mature dark fantasies. I think that's what this tells me, is that mature dark fantasies are about to be in.
Yeah, and this character in this Kotaku article in the picture, she appears to be drinking an iced coffee, so good for her.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's, I think, the thing about a control-like setting is that it's almost like the real world, but with, you know, almost like the Twin Peaks of darkness encroaching from the outside type vibes. Obviously, as a fan of that type of thing, as has been stated many times recently, I'm down AF.
Absolutely.
We also got word here, this was coming out of Nihon Falcom when they posted a few weeks ago their financial report for the fiscal year that had ended in September 2025. They had noted that there will be, in the following fiscal year, that is to say the fiscal year that's going to be ending next September, the release of Sora no Kiseki the Second. This will, of course, be a remake of the second Trails in the Sky game. We just recently got the second or the first chapter remake, and we were kind of here on the show speculating that we might get the announcement of a second chapter remake sooner than later. So it's really exciting to hear that that has come to pass. We're expecting it sometime in the next year. Trails first chapter released this past September, so I'm kind of looking for a toward a similar window for second chapter, maybe August, September of 26. Keep your eyes peeled. Slaggy, do you have any interest in the Trails series?
You know, I've never played them, but I feel like in the past couple of years, like past year or two, like a lot of people are like, yeah, these are great games, so seems like a good time to check them out.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't think of myself as a Trails mega fan, but then I was starting to play Trails and it kind of threw me back to like, oh, I actually did play this back on PSP back in the day. And so it's, I guess I've been saying for a year, like, oh, I want to get into Trails. And it's like, bitch, the joke's on me. I've been into Trails.
LOL. Well, anything that came from the PlayStation Portable, it's good in my eyes. Maybe not everything, but many things.
I was going to say, that's a big statement. But go on.
I just missed the PSP. But anyway, we have news that Pokemon Legends ZA is, as of right now, the best-selling physical game in the U.S. this year. That comes from our good buddy, Matt Piscatella. He's not actually our buddy, but I'm sure he's a nice guy. You know, I think that's interesting because, like, you know, you and I tend to go like digital for these types of releases so we can play like right away at 9 p.m. the night before. But, you know, and other people too. So the fact that I'm sure this pushed a lot of numbers digitally, but also that it's the best selling physical game, people be catching them all.
Yeah, yeah. We had talked last week about Nintendo having just some absolutely monster numbers. And by all accounts, that's not going to be stopping this quarter.
Indeed.
We also got word here. This was, of course, incredibly exciting to me. This was announced during an Xbox partner preview event. Because this was, for the most part, the only thing that I was really, really into about that partner event, we're not really going to devote a whole chunk of time to discussing the partner event. But they did announce what appears to be either a sequel or a at least new and large-scale spinoff to Vampire Survivors. This is Vampire Crawlers. It is a dungeon crawler. It has, you know, deck building card elements. It has roguelike elements. I'm really excited about this. I think it looks really cute and fun. I don't know. I like Vampire Survivors a lot, and I'm really interested in seeing what else they have in mind. Slaggy, did you see this? What were your thoughts?
Looks super cute. Like, Vampire Survivors, I know you're all about it. I get the vibe that it probably would not be a game that connects with my gameplay style, typically,
you know,
but
I'm going to say something controversial. Vampire Survivors can be had for like $3.50. It is actually kind of a gameplay light game in a lot of ways, and I think you might enjoy poking at it and just seeing what it's about. I think it's also been free on some of the services, so but it's super cheap to check out, and even all the expansions and stuff are all only ever like $2 or $3. It's actually quite affordable, which is probably part of why I like it so much.
Absolutely. Even if just to get the Castlevania DLC and be Grant Dynasty.
Ah, well, the thing is for me is like I'm getting dozens of hours out of this game that I only spent a couple bucks on. I think that's a big part of why I feel so strongly and positively about it.
All right. You've convinced me.
Excellent. Let's see. We also had here, this was a really cute one that I saw a fair number of people talking about within a few communities that I am a part of. Yesterday, the climactic episode to the main story of My Hero Academia aired as a part of the anime's 7th or 8th ongoing season. All that remains now is another 4 final episodes that are the epilogue, but the main story concluded.
Wow.
A couple of hours after the episode aired, the staff behind Boku no Hero Aka All's Justice, the upcoming new game coming out of developer By King, they released a trailer that displays almost like the in-game cinema version of that last episode's events. Not the fight itself, but like one of the like heroes uniting to prepare for the final battle sequences, and seeing it replicated in game very similarly to the animation that we had just seen ended up being really cool. It really makes me confident that this upcoming third game is going to tell the rest of the anime and manga story, which I think a lot of us are always really worried about when we play anime games, like what story, right? What arc is this going to cover? So I don't know. I'm always a little questionable about some of these Boku no Hero games, but I'm actually pretty optimistic about this one. I thought this presentation was really surprising and I couldn't help but be excited about it.
Excellent. All right. Something that I think is pretty neat is the fact that ArenaNet has announced Guild Wars Reforged. This is going to include all of the original campaigns from Guild Wars. It is Steam Deck verified and will be free for all existing players and available for new players on Steam or directly from ArenaNet. It'll add controller support, which is really cool. X input for that, you know, if that matters to you, along with high DPI support for modern high-resolution monitors, new HD skill icons, new anti-aliasing options, ambient occlusion, enhanced bloom, font size options, enhanced 3D environmental audio, and a new quest tracker. This is coming December 3rd. I, you know, didn't stick around very long when I played Guild Wars 2 in the past, but when I did play it, I appreciated what was on offer back then. You know, seemed like a solid MMO. I really like playing MMOs with controllers. And especially since Blue Protocol didn't quite leave a lasting impression on me, I might be tempted to check it out. Like, I appreciate that it still is very, like, you know, kind of like classic early 2000s MMO art assets, but, you know, cleaned up to have, like, you know, higher resolution. I just think it looks really neat. And the fact that it is free to play, you know, means I don't have to feel like I owe my life to it, which, you know, no game ever should, but...
Well, and it's worth noting, at least back in the old days, it's typically been buy to play, like you buy the game once and then you just have access.
And the same I recall for 2.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry,
did I call it free to play? I meant no subscription.
Yeah. Well, and I just wanted to clarify for any of our listener. I am really excited about this, though. I put dozens of hours into this game back in the day, and I believe that the packages that are getting this upgrade do include the one that I have. So for me, it's like I have no reason not to check this out after December 3rd.
All right, let me know what server you're on, unless it's like one mega server or whatever.
Ah, yeah, once I dip back in, because it's been years, but once I dip back in, yeah, I'll touch base and let you know.
All right, that'll be like literally next week. Sweet.
Excellent. All right. Well, we also had a fairly exciting announcement. This, of course, being the release date announcement for Pokemon Pokopia that will be releasing next March. That is March 5th, 2026. We also, to celebrate the announce date reveal, more or less, got a extended 10-minute trailer that shows us some of the peculiar new forms that Pokemon will be taking in this game. I'm excited for this game. I will likely be checking it out. Saigi, are you interested in Pokopia?
Not really. It doesn't really align with any of my gaming interests. You know, it's a Pokemon cozy game. Yeah. Not really my thing.
I can understand why that would miss you, yeah.
No, I'm looking at these screenshots over on Nintendo Life, and I'm like, I just think the overall aesthetic is so cute. I mean, it's very much in line with, like, you know, the classic Pokemon sort of top-down style, but just very soft and bright and adorable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with that in mind, then, I just will go down the list of some release updates for y'all. We have word here that Ys 10, Proud Nordics, will be heading to Western territories on February 20th. Tales of Berseria Remastered has been properly announced and will be releasing on February 26th, 2026. Mobile Suit Gundam Silver Phantom has released for PSVR 2. Marvel Cosmic Invasion has had its physical editions announced. This is obviously exciting, as Marvel Cosmic Invasion is a game I'm really looking forward to, and I think a lot of us like to get, you know, the fancy or even plain physical releases of these types of games when we can. This is going to be releasing on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, Switch 2, and Switch on March 13th physically. The digital release is December 3rd, I believe. I'm really excited about this, and it is particularly noteworthy that the Switch 2 version will be a full game on cart rather than a game key card.
Yes.
We also got the stealth announcement and release of two throwback sports releases by Jaleco. This is Jaleco Sports Goal and Jaleco Sports Bases Loaded. Goal, of course, being the classic NES and Super NES Goal soccer games. My brain really wanted to call it football. Bases Loaded, of course, being the well-loved baseball games of the same name, practically iconic back in the 80s.
Yeah, back in the days when you could play it on your ColecoVision, right?
Not quite. Steins Gate reboot has been confirmed for a Western release in 2026, and worldwide it won't be releasing until 2026. From my perspective, obviously, that's a little later than the expected this year, but since a Western release is confirmed to be in the cards, it's hard for me to be too mad about it. We also got the somewhat surprising announcement of Picross S SNK Classics Neo Geo Edition, as well as Picross S Capcom Classics Edition. These have both been announced for Switch and do already have demos available on the eShop.
Nice.
We also got the announcement that the Nippon Ichi software game that had been previously announced as Shinigami Hime has now been properly announced in its full title, Shinigami Hime to Ishiokan no Kaibutsu. This will be releasing on PS5, Switch 2, and Switch. We have previously talked about the Cho Aniki collection. I want to point out to all of you that it is now available on the PC platform. We also have word here that Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, this being the series relaunch that came out of Crystal Dynamics a few years ago, is now available for Switch and Switch 2. Additionally, Vampire Survivors has been announced for VR for the Quest 3, and it is available now. We also got word that Dave the Diver is now available for Xbox Series and Xbox One, as well as physical editions will be coming for other platforms the game is available on, including PS5 and Switch 2. We have the confirmation now release of Silent Hill 2 Remake, having been previously announced for Xbox Series, now properly available. And last but certainly not least, the new HD remaster remake of Onimusha 2 Samurai's Destiny is now available in demo form for the platforms that it is going to be available for. I'm real short on vocal stamina. Slaggy, take us a place.
All right, we've got a couple of Final Fantasy XIV stories to start with. The first one I really wanted to highlight because although I am typically not a fan of Valnet as a corporation, and the website that we are linking to for this article, The Gamer, kind of has a reputation as a bit of a content farm, but this article really kind of brought to light a situation in the Final Fantasy XIV fandom that should be discussed. And this is actually part of an upcoming feature with the voice actress Sina Breyer, who is the voice of Wuklamot from the Dawntrail expansion. And you might be familiar with the terrible fact that she suffered a lot of transphobic abuse. Obviously never excusable. So she was talking about, you know, that she approached the company when this started happening. Square assured her that they were on the case, but then at Anime Expo, she actually got to meet Yoshi P, and he said that, you know, he apologized on behalf of the team for what she went through and, you know, took the time to talk to her and was very kind to her about it. And then just a cute little side note is that she gave him a bead necklace that someone had given her as a gift that has the whole, have you heard of the critically acclaimed MMO Final Fantasy XIV meme? Like, that's, it's the so whole incredible. Statement, 8 feet long. She said he didn't really know what to do with it. Like, my thing is that obviously in late stage capitalism, like, I'm not saying we should place our trust in companies, but when they do stand on the right side of things here, like Square has, and specifically Yoshi P, good on them. And not that any of our lovely or beautiful listener need to hear it, but like, keep hateful rhetoric to yourself if you're a hater. Like, it's never okay, regardless of whether you agree with someone's lifestyle or whatever, to be hateful in such a toxic way that, you know, threatens someone's livelihood. I have a lot of groups of people that I do not like, but, you know, behave yourself, people. I would say that the Final Fantasy XIV community overall is a very positive one, but, you know, every community has its darker parts.
Yeah, and unfortunately, news stories like this really get weaponized by bad actors when they realize, oh, that voice actress is, you know, someone who is trans. Well, that means we should all be jumping on this and, you know, dogpiling. And so I'm really glad to hear that Yoshi P really stood on business. That's really important and really good, I think.
Right, right. And I think that Sam Woods, who wrote this article, like, I appreciate the fact that, you know, that's why I may not be a fan of certain platforms, but I will always, you know, anyone who is trying to write about games for a living, well, not maybe not everyone, you know, I will never judge someone just because they are writing for a certain site that has a certain reputation if they are doing good reporting, like Sam Woods did. Another Final Fantasy XIV story, question mark, because it's really just a little snippet.
But it's a snippet that has the whole fan base in it.
Basically, I found this over on Reddit, but basically what happened is that Yoshi P did an interview with Korean media and basically talked about the fact that, you know, the game had completed kind of its first 10 years with the culmination of the original story in Endwalker, and said that a fairly big announcement is being prepared to be announced at the FanFests. And with the determination that the game will be reborn, capital R, for the second time, under the goal that the game will evolve into a cutting-edge service, we're rethinking everything from zero. And because 'tis the season, and I love The Nightmare Before Christmas, I'm like, what does it mean? What does it mean? Yoshi P confused me so, confounded, oh, I love him so. Something's up with Jack, something's up with Jack. Like, seriously, I can't even begin to think of what he can mean by rethinking everything from zero. Like, we could probably have an entire episode about A Realm Reborn again, question mark. I'm just trying to remain optimistic because, of course, Reddit being Reddit, people are like, oh, they're going to make it gacha based. They're going to make it, you know, battle pass. They're going to make it this, this, this. Like, I think what they're starting to do with variable difficulties in, like, the deep dungeon and stuff might be more of, like, along the lines of what we're thinking, kind of, like, just rethinking of what it is to be an MMO in the modern era. And, you know,
I hear you. I actually, my true belief on this, when he talks about evolving from into a cutting edge service and rethinking everything from zero. I'm hoping this means that they're actually peeling back the layers and actually going to go and make some changes to some of that foundational stuff that they've previously have said could never be changed because the current game is built on the carcass of the old game.
Like the spaghetti code?
Well, precisely, right? Like the way that we can't have a dresser in our customizable spaces because something in the code that they've tried to fix but can't figure out will always make it crash when they place it and then try to access it, right?
Yeah.
We have all of these issues that they literally can't get around. We were just talking about the snapshotting. You know, that to me is also kind of the way that the snapshotting works is kind of a relic of how the core game was built. There are better ways to do that type of MMO combat with the ground markers and stuff now that gives you what the players are expecting to experience rather than the snapshotted version where you always have to be sort of a second ahead or a second behind. And if you're not, you're going to get hit, whether it looks like it or not, right? I look at these issues. I look at how like half of the classes they've been trying to overhaul for the last 5 years. And I don't know. I think it all kind of comes together that I think we are going to get with the next expansion a fairly large systems refresh. And when they say they're rebuilding and rethinking from zero, I hope it means that they're really, really doing the work and finally taking on that, as you call it, spaghetti code.
Yeah, the funny thing would be, it's like, no, zero was meant to be with a capital Z, and zero is going to be the new protagonist. Ah. I would be into it.
Honestly, though, that would be fine, because I do love zero.
Yeah, just zero is me,
when I think about evolving the game to a cutting-edge service, rethinking from zero, it tells me that they're no longer trying to be held back by the past for the next version.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 14, too.
I mean, honestly, I said last time, I already felt like Realm Reborn was 14 part two. So this would be part three.
Part three, zero returns.
And then I think you had one more 14 bit you wanted to share.
Yeah, Silicon Era pointed out that up until December 7th, you can pick up the Digital Collector's Edition upgrades for the various expansions for a price of $9.99. Are you out of your mind? This is a pretty good price because those include mounts, minions, and like armor or weapon glamours such as Cecil's Dark Knight Helm or Squall's Gunblade. If you're not opposed to microtransactions, like $9.99 is less than most of the mounts cost, so you get quite a good bang for your buck for that money.
Excellent. That's awesome. I will note that for me, the main part of the news in this link is word that the Final Fantasy 14 Letter from the Producer Live episode 90 will be happening on December 5th at its same time slot as usual. So for us, 3 a.m. Pacific.
It's 3 a.m. You must be lonely.
All right. This will be giving us sort of the part two content update of what's to appear in the 7.4 patch content. I'm really excited about this. I always get excited about these letters to the producer, letters from
Absolutely.
The producers, because they just give us sort of the roadmap of what we get to be excited about coming to the world of Eorzea.
And coming soon on Game Movie, Letter to the Producer, where we talk to Yoshi P. Not to Yoshi P, but we put it out in the universe about what we want. Just kidding.
Excellent. All right. Well, then moving on, we have a really wonderful news story here. This is following up on word that the former Sega/GO arcade in Akihabara. We had noted that this had been closing, you know, due to, frankly, a lot of economic situations that have occurred in recent years. But we are very, very, very happy to report that yesterday, Saturday 22nd, at 10 a.m. Japan time, they actually reopened and have been reborn as Silk Hat Akihabara. The new center is still utilizing 9 floors for different types of arcade games, similar to how it used to be laid out. The basement floor, for example, is one of Japan's largest arrays of Gundam Extreme versus Second Infinite Boost cabinets, where they have 58 of them set up. The next set of floors are crane games, and then they get to more serious business with the arcade games, than, you know, rhythm games, Bimani Studio games. It really sounds like Silcat Akihabara is going to be as good or, you know, comparable to what we used to get out of Club Sega Akiba or, you know, Jigo Akiba. I'm really, really excited about this. I had been really bummed that this location had announced it was closing because it's so iconic and I have memories there myself. Just super exciting news. Did you have any thoughts on this one, Slaggy?
It's like when a band that you really like breaks up and you think they'll never get back together and then they do. Except it's an arcade this time.
Akihabara Live 25.
Ah, yes.
We also had a really interesting little excerpt from an interview here coming out of Game Informer magazine. We will link you to GameInformer.com over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
But basically there was a interview. It's somewhat lengthy with Yuji Horii, the creator of Dragon Quest, and one excerpt from it that got pulled from this larger deep dive is that sort of referring to the Hideo Kojima USB stick of game ideas in case he dies that had been notable earlier this year, they asked Yuji Horii if he sort of had a similar sense toward his game development history and his, you know, potential future making Dragon Quest games. And in response, he basically said, you know, he does expect to work on the series until he dies. He notes that, you know, increasingly he has had to rely in some areas on other staff slash team members to work on parts of the Dragon Quest titles, but he would like to keep himself involved in overseeing everything, and that, you know, he really considers the series to be his child that he loves, and so he's, to a sense, it almost seems happy to work on it until he would die. I thought this was really sweet and touching. It's not really that surprising to me, given how much heart tends to be present in the Dragon Quest games, that he would have a perspective like that. And yet, all the same, it just has me really excited for the upcoming Dragon Quest VII Reimagined. In fact, that's the game that this interview was being done to promote. Did you have any thoughts about this bit of culture?
Yeah. You know, just that I love when creators are passionate about their work, but, like, similar to how, you know, we've seen Masahiro Sakurai-san, like, work himself into literal exhaustion and put his own health at risk, I just hope that, you know, Horii-san would, you know, make sure to prioritize his health and be able to, like, spend time with his family and stuff like that. But, you know, it's his life. And, you know,
his life.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, if this is what he gets joy from doing, then I can't fault him for that at all. And we're all the richer for it.
Absolutely.
And speaking of richer, basically, if you want to be a gamer, you've got to be richer than you used to be. You know, we joke about you know, as much as we joke about Randy P talking about premium games for premium gamers, like, the way that we have prices on the rise for everything, being able to afford consoles and games really is a privilege. It's kind of the gist of what Matt Piscatella was saying on a podcast he was on. You know, he's talking about that it's not just gaming becoming more expensive, but the increase in cost for spending categories such as food and housing means that some gamers who are struggling more financially with some of these basic needs are trending more towards free-to-play games like Fortnite. Also noted that there's growth being seen in the subscription services such as PS Plus, Game Pass, and Switch Online. I suppose, you know, you can get more bang for your buck that way. He mentioned that those who can afford consoles, since those are infrequent purchases, may not be paying attention to the rising costs. So they're willing to, as he cited, spend $70 for Ghosts of Yotei or pay a higher price for a PS5 when it gets a price increase or buy a Switch 2, for example. I mean, in my case and arguably your case, I definitely noticed the price increases, but that's probably because we're on a podcast where not only is our mantra keep gaming, keep thinking, but we also literally talk about the price increases. But, you know, the other thing is that I recognize that I'm coming from a place of privilege being able to afford this hobby, so it's always interesting to get Piscatella's perspective.
Well, and right, and this is them sort of codifying something that we've sort of talked around a little bit. This isn't that different of a talking point than us in previous weeks talking about the value of demos in the modern economy, so that we don't waste your money, you know, on a game that you're ultimately not really going to be into. Yeah, if you're paying attention, I've seen a lot of people who really don't play single player games or anything that you have to pay to log into. We here on the show, as people who, you know, buy games and have subscriptions to games, even like, yeah, we're in a very privileged place in the modern economy, I suspect. And even then, you know, I can say definitely that, like, there are multiple hardware purchases I'd like to make that I am not making simply because the current economic times are so uncertain that it's like, look, I would love to have like a PS5 Pro, for example. In fact, I've seen them for $100 off this week repeatedly because of, you know, Black Friday sales and stuff. But the flip is I already have a fully working PS5. That PS5 Pro won't give me any new software access at all. And I can imagine a circumstance where, like, in the modern economy, that's 3 weeks of groceries. Only 3 weeks. That's crazy, but that's 3 weeks of groceries. Like,
yep.
Right now, it's just a better choice to get my family the groceries they need. And in fact, I've said this on the show. I, like, really resent the stereotype that gamers can't, like, prioritize and, you know, make good, healthy life choices. I don't know. I think a lot of us would really do to, like, take a step back and just remember, as these things get more and more expensive, like, if you're not playing these games and if you're not enjoying these games, stop buying these games. if you're not playing a game and you're subscribed to it, cancel that subscription. and just, yeah, really do everything you can. Like, I no longer have bought multiple pieces of hardware I might like. I've reduced my typical game spend monthly just because, you know, to a certain degree, I would buy games that I would not play all the way through, you know, just because I wanted to have access, wanted to see if I enjoyed the games, want to share them and loan them out to my friends. But in a lot of cases right now, the current economic moment, unfortunately, that is just not as viable right now. And even still, I exist in a space of extreme privilege.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of that having been said, well, we have a kind of really inspiring and exciting news story here, but it starts obviously a little sad. Back in June, Riot canceled a game called Hytale. This was a Minecraft-inspired survival game from Hypixel Studios. And this was fairly controversial even at the time. You know, this was 5 years after they had acquired the studio. The team was shut down as a result of this. It all just kind of sucks, but basically the founder of Hypixel has announced that they have actually gotten the rights to the game back. They have rehired staff that had previously been working on the game. And basically, you know, there had been a whole plan with Riot to take the almost early access viable version, like 1.0 version of the game. Riot was working with them to pump resources into like a 2.0 version instead. What is basically going to happen here in this revival is that they are just going back to that version 1.0 release, and they're just going to put it through to early access in short order, since they were already almost there on that build of the game. And then they're going to resume development from there. I think this is really cool. I think it's really wonderful, particularly following up on news. You know, we talked just a couple weeks ago about canceled games and, you know, abandonware games and the lost media that these canceled games can become. I think it's really cool to hear that this game is being resurrected. Further from just its revival, the developers, whom think they will have news of the early access release date as early as this upcoming week, so maybe even by the time you've heard this, we'll have more information about this.
Wow. But
they're basically planning to aggressively price the release as low as possible. There will be like some special editions in case you want to dip in a little harder and give them a little more support. But otherwise, they basically just want to get the game out there. I think they're talking about like maybe a $20 price point and just get the game released, get people working on it, and let people see this game that they've been trying to get out for years and have been really excited about. I think this is really cool. I'm just honestly really stoked for this, and I hope it goes well for everyone involved.
Yeah, it's like when a newer indie band that you're into breaks up way before their time, and then they get back together. I don't know how often that situation happens, but...
I mean, I guess kind of My Chemical Romance, they reformed, right?
I don't know if they'd call them an indie band, though, but yeah, they did.
You know, that's fair. I mean, from my perspective, they kind of started that way, but no, I hear you.
True.
All right.
They've got that vampire money.
Ah, right. Oh, I love that record. Anyway, Kirby Air Riders has come out, and we've gotten word of a pretty wild and funny thing that has happened in the game's player base. So you can paint your own hoverboard, and you can even, I guess, in-game upload it to like the in-game shop to share with other people. Folks have been using this mode to create like really unhinged vehicles and like embrace long-time Kirby fan memes. Like the infamous Chief Kawasaki in a bikini that was actually taken from like an old band fan game. I've seen people make like Pepsi, Domo-kun, or even like Pokemon out of the various vehicles. It's all just really exciting. But something that's really funny to note about specifically was that the Chief Kawasaki one, which... some players have actually found their Chief Kawasaki boards have been removed. It was becoming like the most trending, like trading item in the shop. And I guess as a result, the prices for it in game were skyrocketing, which
is so funny
to me.
I don't think it's that offensive, though. I mean, I get that it's an E for everyone game.
Yeah, my thing, even in an E for everyone game, I personally don't find it offensive at all. I don't find there anything actually suggestive about
you can see a bikini at the beach.
Right? There's just nothing actually offensive there. It's just funny. I don't know. I think people are way too puritanical about some of this stuff because I don't see anything actually offensive here. Slaggy, what else do you got for us?
Yeah, so I've got some Borderlands 4 news for y'all. Normally, I wouldn't just quote from the article to tell you what it's about, but this article was over on Kotaku by writer Zach Zweisen. And it's just so perfect, I just have to read it verbatim. Ho ho ho, happy holidays. Everyone is getting Borderlands 4's first DLC for free because the game needed so much post-launch fixing that Gearbox couldn't finish the game in time and will make it up to fans who paid for the pack with extra DLC next year. Like, LOL. I mean, I don't know if that was intended to be a dig, but kind of, you know. It's kind of a self-own when it comes to Gearbox these days, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. Randy Pitchford doesn't make it easy to want to root for Gearbox, I tell you what.
Right. Despite, I'm sure there are lots of wonderful people who are working there. Yeah. The serious news is that if you are a Borderlands 4 fan, you probably have already obtained Bounty Pack 1, How Rush Saved Mercenary Day. It adds a new questline, guns, and cosmetics.
Cool. Exciting. Ah! All right. Well, we also have word here about a couple of interesting Sony spin-offs. This first one is a New Horizon MMO. This is Horizon Steel Frontiers. This game allows players to create a custom character in the Horizon world and to almost take on like a Monster Hunter type experience of hunting the prehistoric robots. The dinosaur robots. Let's just call them what they are.
And don't forget the robots.
This is going to be playable on PC and mobile platforms. Many people, of course, are noting it's kind of funny. It, at least at this time, is not slated for the PlayStation platforms. That having been said, as a fan of Monster Hunter, which it looks like it's taking a lot of direction from, as well as enjoying the Horizon series, I am potentially interested in this, even if I think the lack of Sony platform support is a little funny. Slaggy, did you have any thoughts on this?
You said it very well. Although I have not checked out any of the Horizons yet, which is something I should change.
Indeed. Well, and this is sort of on the opposite end, scope and scale-wise, but we also got a announcement of a new Ratchet & Clank spinoff. This is a free-to-play mobile arena shooter. It's called Ranger Rumble, and it is, to the best of my awareness, already testing in limited regions. We are not in one of them, but if you are, you should check it out. Otherwise, you know, no release date was announced, but it is supposedly coming in other regions soon, and pre-registrations are available. Please look forward to it. Is this one you would anticipate checking out, Slaggy?
I'm not sure. I mean, probably not, but you never know.
Fair enough. Let's see. We also have word here of news that Jeff Keighley has made plans for his Game Awards ceremony that will be happening in just a few weeks, the Game Awards. It is going to be live streaming on Amazon's Prime Video. This is being noted as the first time the Game Awards has been partnered with a streaming service. I believe that's true, while I also have to note that I feel like it used to air on like Spike TV or something. So like, I kind of feel like that's true, but with a bullet. That having been said, you know, the show will have its Prime Video stream. It's also going to have the usual broadcasts on YouTube and on Twitch. This is going to be airing on December 11th. So we will obviously be tuned in, and we'll talk about the announcements that follow. I don't want to waste too much time here, but I will say the Keighleys, as I like to call them, or, you know, the Game Awards, mostly serve as a industry inflection point for showing trailers and shit.
Yeah.
It's a little bit less about celebrating the games themselves, which I think is very unfortunate. I actually think that we do have a need for an E3 type announcement event and a games as art celebration event. And Keighley has done the capitalism of it all and mushed the two together in order to get any progress made, is the charitable way I tend to try to look at it. I will watch because I do want to see the new announcements. And as much as I hate to admit it, I do care what game gets Game of the Year because it will have an impact on discussion moving forward. I don't really care in the sense of like, oh, if my fave doesn't get it, I'm going to be so mad. I don't really care in that regard. I just care about the real material impact it's going to have. What was that?
Let's be real. I said it probably will be Expedition 33. Let's be real.
Yeah, I would like it if Clair Obscur won, but I could imagine it getting overlooked.
Yeah, well, anyway, maybe they can use some of this Amazon money to bring back Future Class, right?
Fat chance.
It's the Anakin and Padme meme.
I got
a sponsorship for the Game Awards from Amazon, and then Padme says, and you'll use the money to bring back Future Class, right? And you'll use the money to bring back Future Class, right?
Well,
speaking
sir,
of streaming
like
services,
it.
Right?
Yeah, we have word here. Yeah, we have word here. We had previously discussed the Hideo Kojima Death Stranding animation project Mosquito, but this is actually the announcement of a second Death Stranding anime. This one will be Death Stranding Isolations and is going to be an anime TV series created for Disney Plus.
What?
Right? The news was announced via the official The Game Awards account, which isn't a big surprise as Kojima and Keighley are good friends. The official announcement indicates that the project will be releasing in 2027. We ended up getting a little more information about this project out of Deadline. Kotaku does link to the Deadline article. We will link to the Kotaku article over on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
But it looks like the series is going to be directed by the director of Dragon Ball Z Battle of Gods, Takayuki Sano-san.
Oh, wow.
And they stressed that it will be a traditional hand-drawn 2D animation project. And this is, in fact, even going to be a spin-off story of Sam Porter Bridges, who was the main character from the first game. So I think a lot of us who you know, like that game, like that story, are really excited about this.
I'm excited for Mickey Mouse to be like, hey, boys and girls, we're just streaming on the beach.
That's funny. I wonder if they'll do any, like, short videos to promo it.
Death Stranding coming to Kingdom Hearts 4 confirmed.
Just
kidding. But something that will be likely coming to another game is a recent Fortnite leak. And, you know, these are pretty reliable usually.
Well, and it's worth noting, this was cited as a leak, but it is also shown in the upcoming season end of event trailer.
Oh, right.
So it is happening.
Yeah, so basically, the story here is that we are getting a Homer Simpson Fortnite skin where he's in his underwear. You know, that's happened on the show. Like, you know, that's not the newsworthy thing, though, because notably, this means that Homer Simpson is going to be the very first character in Fortnite 2, as the author of this article, Victoria Phillips Kennedy, wrote on Eurogamer, get his nipples out. There are plenty of shirtless characters available in the game, and believe me, I speak from experience. But notably, none of them have nipples. This includes real people like Travis Scott and Bruno Mars. Like, if you John look at their Cena. Skins... Yeah, John Cena, yeah. Their pectorals perplexingly lack a particular protrusion. So I think this is personally the biggest nipple news in gaming since Mario got his nipples out in Super Mario Brothers Odyssey. What about you? Has there been bigger nipple news for you since then? Or
No, this might be the nippliest of news.
Ooh, wonderful.
That's fucking culture.
Nipples? Nipples are culture?
Yes, yes they are.
Yes, nipples are culture, bitch.
We also got word here, Gary's mod is still getting updates. Basically, there was a new Gary's mod update that came out, bringing over even more new weapons, bringing new NPC behavior routines, bringing up some of the new mod visuals have been changed and updated to sort of match like modern expectation. You know, just really wild and cool that this game, which, you know, it's been around for the better part of 20 years now, continues to get new content, get updated, you know, get visual retouches that keep it modern enough. I just think it's really neat.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the modern skibbity toilet of it all owes a lot to Gary's mod.
Yeah, absolutely. We also got word that one of the Game Awards nominees, this was Megabonk, is actually going to be withdrawn from the Game Awards presentation. The game's developer basically said on social media that Megabonk is not actually their first game, so being put up for Best Debut Indie Game doesn't really feel appropriate to him. He doesn't feel it qualifies because it's not his first game, not his debut game. And so while he, you know, appreciates the nomination, support, and votes, it doesn't feel right in the category. I think that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, Megabonk is a game that a fair number of people have talked to just about being like almost a 3D take on a Vampire Survivors type approach to game design. That's obviously a lot of word of the day flavors in gaming that they're chasing. That having been said, I actually had thought that this was likely to win when I saw it nominated because of the buzz that the game had. So seeing them step down from a, you know, acknowledgement like this that definitely would have increased sales and put them on other people's radar is just really cool and wild to me. It is not what I think the modern world encourages people to do, which is basically take advantage of any system or mistake that you can to advance yourself by whatever means possible. I just really love that these developers said, hey, this is not our first game. We can't do this. I think that's wonderful.
Absolutely. Applaud.
And then we also had a really cute little culture piece here. Basically, monthly KoroKoro comic magazine had announced on this past Friday that they're finally ready to award the winners from an Inazuma 11 prize drawing that they did back in May of 2018. This was, of course, back when the game was known as Inazuma 11 Ares. The version of the game that actually now finally released after, you know, 7+ years of delays is actually Inazuma 11 Victory Road. That's fine, though. It's not a problem. It is noted on Anime News Network that KoroKoro Comics' target children is elementary school children. But some of the readers from when this prize drawing happened will likely now be entering their first year of college.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, Inazuma 11 Victory Road, which did release this past week, is a game that has been in the works for so long that I think we may have talked about it as a future game on some of our old run episodes.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's just really wild. But I thought this was a really cute story. I thought it kind of closed the loop on some of those older stories we had talked about. And I just thought it was cute stuff.
Yeah.
If you think you might be one of these 100 winners from back in the day, the magazine is asking that you basically send them a postcard with your current information as well as your information at the time of, and they're going to hope to get you linked up by, it looks like January 14th. I don't think that applies to any of our listeners, but I do think this is a really interesting news story.
Yeah, that's so funny. Something that is super cute is that Hello Yoshi is now available on the Google Play Store in Japanese and English, and also Japanese-only App Store at the moment. This is an app similar to Hello Mario, where you can manipulate Yoshi's face. You can also give him power-ups and play hide-and-seek with Boo. Super cute.
Absolutely. And then last but not least is a kind of a news story I'm going to do my best not to soapbox on too much. This was news that basically coming out of a new Entertainment Software Association's holiday survey, basically there is a majority of children that want in-game currency for Christmas as a gift. And, you know, the gifts are what a lot of people are looking at these kinds of surveys in order to get. Like, that's the information people are looking at. But the more interesting culture piece about it to me was that the data strongly suggests that as almost 60% of children who were asked, who were polled for this, indicated that what they really wanted was just for their kids to play games with them. Or, I'm sorry, I mean parents, obviously.
Aww.
Even as they went into teenagers, that number only dropped to 45%. So still like half. This is, I think, such a huge deal, right? You constantly, because I know multiple people our age with kids, many of them with multiple kids, who are now old enough to have opinions and personalities. And I keep hearing them say that their kids don't want to spend time with them or whatever. And I'll note, I'm obviously thinking of a couple different families when I say this. Like, I've heard across multiple families where, like, the parents think their kids don't want to spend time with them already. But even within my own experience, it's like, I'm pretty sure your kids want to be gaming with you. So hearing this reported, and in fact, even tying it to my own life, right? When I was a kid, man, I wanted my parents to take gaming seriously so bad. Like, if I could have had even just 15 minutes a week where one of my parents played a video game with me, that would have meant the fucking world to me.
Aw.
But that type of thing for my parents, that was just not something they were really interested in. The vibes in my house growing up were a lot more like, you know, well, the kids are an inconvenience. Someday they'll grow up and we'll know them then. And it's like, okay, bye, girl. Cat Stevens has a song for you. You should check that out.
Oh, boy.
But honestly and sincerely, if you're listening to this and you have kids, it's possible that me saying this directly could get me in trouble with a certain friend of ours whom has guested on this show before, but it's a good thing when your kids want to spend time with you. It's a good thing if you can include them in your gaming habits. If you have kids who want to spend time with you, want to game with you, and you're excited about games, it's like a slam dunk to meet them in the middle. I also know for fact that we do have at least one listener who is a parent who already does this type of gaming with their... No, I know for a fact we have multiple parents who listen to this show who do gaming with their kids already. So I am not talking to or about you.
No, and I was thinking specifically of our Game Buoy Superfan family.
Yeah, and I was thinking of someone else and then realized I was also talking about the Superfan, which is why I realized, really, I know for a fact we have multiple listeners who are doing this kind of stuff. But if you're listening... Yes. If you're listening and you're not, I think that the data truly shows that you should really consider it.
Yeah.
We also had a really interesting piece of data come out of the various press that is going on for the three new Steam devices that we had detailed earlier in this episode. On the day that announcement happened, I think that was November 12th or so, basically, some people were asking, hey, what about Steam Deck? Where's the Steam Deck 2? And basically, the Valve software engineer, Pierre-Louis Griffay, said that in an interview, you know, Steam Deck isn't our focus today, but the same things we've said in the past, where we're really interested to work on what's next for Steam Deck, the thing we're making sure of is that it's worthwhile enough performance upgrade to make sense as a standalone product. Basically, as they've kind of indicated before, they do know what they want the next Steam Deck to look like. It just sounds like the hardware itself is just not there yet, you know, so they kind of have to wait until the actual hardware that performs where they want it for their next, you know, what they want out of the next system on a chip, for example, it has to get there before they can make it. So, unfortunately, this makes sense to me. It just kind of sounds like we're still a couple years off of the next Steam Deck, which is not really anything different than they have consistently been saying since like September of 23, basically.
Yeah, but it does mean that when we do get the Steam Deck 2, it's probably going to be a beast.
Yeah, it will likely be a worthwhile heart or a upgrade when it does come. That is definitely the flip side there. Yep.
All right. Well, I wonder if families in Idaho are playing games with their children.
I hope so. It would be a good thing.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
All right. Unfortunately, this is a little bit of a doom and gloom because we have word that the formerly delayed Western release of the Corpse Party Tetralogy Pack has now been canceled. XSEED has issued an apology to fans and said that they remain committed to working with Mages. Just that at this time, they were informed that the various games in the Tetralogy pack contained contents that do not comply with current platform guidelines.
Yikes. We had kind of talked previously about how this was had been delayed because of these same concerns. It's really unfortunate to hear that they were not able to work out a way to get this remedied and are having to cancel the release.
Right, right. And, you know, I can't help but wonder, I feel like I keep hearing that ever since the Collective Shout business all started up, that just generally anime games and like anime merchandise through things like, you know, PayPal or whatever, like anything that's not even adult in nature. I know the furry fandom is pointing out a lot of this too. Like anything that's not even necessarily adult oriented, but just it's just furry content. It's like being flagged as like inappropriate.
Yeah, it's not good stuff.
Yeah.
We have a really wild news story here. This is one that took me a couple of days to wrap my head around.
Right.
Basically, the upcoming Chapter 7 of Fortnite, right now, the theme appears to be, like, Hollywood, West Coast, LA, the movies, but the only collaboration we know about about Chapter 7 so far is quite a doozy. They've announced a promotional event for the upcoming theatrical re-release of Kill Bill. This is Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. The promotional aspect is that if you see the movie opening week and you get your tickets online from Fandango, you can also get a code to get a Gogo Yubari skin in Fortnite, which is itself already a pretty major get. Then in the teaser trailer for the new season, Chapter 7, the bride features somewhat prominently. And then a few nights ago at the influencer teaser event for Chapter 7, where influencers got to sort of check out the new season, sort of behind closed doors, my understanding with the impressions being largely embargoed until presumably we're about to release. At that influencer event, however, Epic and Quentin Tarantino released visual art suggesting that the new season will have some type of event, Fortnite After Dark, that refers to the lost chapter of Kill Bill, Yuki's Revenge. Yuki's Revenge is notable. I am very much a student of Tarantino in this regard. This was a sequence that actually had appeared scripted in the original script for Kill Bill. It was a revenge sequence of Gogo Yubari's sister coming to get revenge on the bride for what she had done to the Crazy 88 and specifically Gogo Yubari. We don't know yet to what degree this is going to be realized in game, but again, this is a sequence that was fully scripted out but never filmed that is now going to be realized in Fortnite in some way. To Kill Bill, that again, Tarantino is fully on board with. This influencer event happened at Tarantino's movie theater. I'm agog. I can't even put my words together on this. This is so mind-blowing to me. Slaggy, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I just think that I would have never expected Kill Bill to show up in Fortnite, but here you go.
Right, and then not only is it Kill Bill showing up in Fortnite, it's literally previously unrealized content potentially being realized for the first time. That is, at least presently, the story. It's in the script. Like, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, you could fit this into the canon real easily. Like, is this going to be a new anime sequence, or is this going to be a gameplay sequence that adapts the story? We don't even know that yet. It's just such a wild, wild, wild west, so to speak.
So what you're saying is that Chapter 7, Season 2 is going to be a Wild Wild West Will Smith collaboration.
Ah, beware the giant robo spiders.
Ah, right. I can't wait to roll into the new map with y'all in the pussy wagon.
Oh my god, though, for real. But I do wish to keep the ball rolling. We Indeed. Also have a story here. When the Switch 2 update for, I guess it was version 21.0.0 of the Switch OS came out, it apparently caused issues with quite a few different non-official TV Switch docks and, you know, dongle adapters for docks. Nintendo is noting that this was not a intentional change. They did not intentionally block third-party docks, and they're noting that they are working to, or indicating that they're working to resolve some of these incompatibilities. So initially it had looked like Nintendo intentionally killed third-party docks, but it became quickly clear, you know, they put out a statement saying it was not intended and we're looking into it. So from the sound of it, if you have a unofficial dock and you are impacted by this update, I would say, you know, sit on it. Don't get rid of your dock yet, because it does sound like it may come back into function.
Oh.
We also have word of a new Final Fantasy VII Rebirth novelization. This one is going to be releasing in late January 26. It is called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Dear Destiny.
Yes.
On the cover, at least, prominently features Aerith and Tifa. Square Enix has indicated the novel will also include Cloud. While this novel has only been announced for Japanese release, it is worth noting that we do get English releases for a fair number of these types of novels in the modern day via publishers like Yen Press. So
yeah.
I'm optimistic that we will get a release of this one.
Excellent. We have the announcement that the previously announced Poke Park Kanto, which is an expansion of Tokyo's Yomiuri Land theme park, will be opening on February 5th, 2026. The article on Anime News Network showed some little concept art and a little information about it. There's going to be two areas, Pokemon Forest and Sedge Town. The Pokemon Forest has 500 meters in length with various terrains and Pokemon. Sedge Town will feature a Pokemon Center, Pokemon Mart, or Pokemart for short, Sedge Gym, the Primarina Fountain, a Pokemon Parade, and other attractions. Something that was funny to me is that it was talking about, despite the park being named after the Pokemon region Kanto, it will feature over 600 Pokemon from different regions. I'm like, yes. However, Kanto is also literally the region of Japan where Tokyo is, that Kanto, the in-game region, was named after. So it's literally Poke Park Kanto, but I get it. I just thought that was a funny little twist. Or maybe that was fully intentional, that they're like, oh, it's themed around Kanto, and it is in Kanto, not in Kanto.
All right, we also have word here that Street Fighter VI has now crossed the 6 million units sold mark. This is, of course, exciting. This indicates that they have moved an additional 300,000 units in the past quarter, which is pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I'm And in fact, I say in the previous quarter, but I really mean in this quarter to date, because it was announced in their disclosures on September 30th that they were at 5.7 million units, which is how we can sort of come backwards work toward that data. Just really exciting stuff. I think it's a really stupendous game, and I think it absolutely deserves all the sales.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. And I'm traditionally not great at Street Fighter games. I had a great time with it, and we'll probably revisit again soon. Yeah.
Indeed. We also have word here coming out of Arc System Works that the Switch version of Guilty Gear Strive is finally getting the rest of the Season 4 DLC that they have been waiting for. Basically, all three of the remaining fighters are going to be releasing on December 18th. This is Lucy, Unica, and Venom. Several of these characters we've actually talked about here on the show since we've been back, Unica and Lucy in particular.
Yeah.
When Arc System Works put this statement out, it kind of indicated that when the new release window is here because additional work became necessary during the testing and verification process for these contents. So that's obviously exciting stuff. My expectation is that Switch 1 was going to get left in the past, but because of Switch 2, they're now going to continue doing work on Strive on the Switch family of platforms. So it will be interesting to see how this goes in the coming days, weeks, months, years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a really weird story here, too. Sammy basically announced that they're releasing a mobile version of the official God Eater Resurrection patchy slot game. This is going to be releasing in early December on iOS and Android in Japan. It's going to be a paid app available for about 3,500 yen. And it's actually based directly on the patchy slot machine that was released in casinos in July of 2024. So this obviously is referring to the old series that started on the PSP platform in 2010. It has had iterations on more modern hardware, including PlayStation 4. There was a Vita as well remake of the first game in the series. This is a heck of funny though to me. I'm really used to these patchy slot game releases being limited to like anime crossover stuff. Them doing it for a game series just seems really weird to me, but I can't really bring myself to hate it, even if I'm not in the target audience. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, better than just having Konami patchy slot, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely prefer this patchy slot your whole business.
Right. All right. Closing things out in Idaho, we have the confirmation that Mega Zerora will be one of the Mega Evolutions in the upcoming Mega Dimension DLC. This is notable because this means that the leaks in the PokéLeak subreddit that were talking about the upcoming Megas seems to be valid. I can't wait to get a Mega Zeraora and name it Zeraora Zoro. Maybe teach it Swords Dance if it can learn that move.
I'm getting increasingly excited for this DLC to release on December 10th.
Right, Zeraora is a great Poké.
Strong agree. Well, with all that having been said, do you have anything controversial for me?
Controversial.
Oh my god.
Burmy should only evolve into Wormadam and not Mothim.
That is controversial, girl.
All right, so, starting things out with lots of fun here. There was an interview done with the CEO of Arrowhead, Shams Georgiani, Arrowhead, of course, being the developer behind Helldivers. And it was kind of, not the whole interview, but the question that we are kind of focusing in that this VideoGamesChronicle.com article focuses on is the controversy surrounding the AI voices in Arc Raiders, which, by the way, I would have been willing to check out, but gross. And basically, the CEO basically said that, you know, like, everything, it seems so black and white in the discussion of AI and gaming. Either it's this controversy about the Square Enix stuff, like we talked about, or that developers feel that their very fabric of their being is being threatened, and therefore all AI is bad AI. And says, maybe it could be that reality is somewhere in the middle. Could it be?
Honestly, call me old-fashioned, right? But remove your generative AI before release and only use it behind the scenes for, like, programmer art actually is the middle ground.
Yeah, even then, like, can we not? I mean, we know that not every studio is using generative AI. You know, I hate to linger on this subject, but everybody is doing it, so why can't we? That's not a good perspective to take.
I completely agree, right? Like, and that's, you know, it's exactly speaks to my point, right? It's like, it's fine if they insist that they have to use it, but removing it before the final product is the compromise. We don't want any of it. They're sitting here like, oh, there has to be a middle. Like, yeah, the middle is do it in these ways that we don't have to fucking see it because we don't want it.
Right, right. You know, and my thing is, it's like, just the whole thing about like AI usage, like literally changes the way that your brain works. Like, I don't need AI to turn everyone into zombies. I think there's no need to argue about that.
Well, and we actually got a interesting piece here. I'm going to end up tying these two together conversationally because our next news story we're going to talk to, this ran over on Games Radar, and it's from a piece with Shuhei Yoshida-san. And he's basically indicating in his words, you know, that he sees AI springing up in, you know, both the indie scene and in larger studios in every aspect of game development. And then he goes on to talk about how, you know, it's being used to create concept art for proposals. It's being used to read voice lines during development. It's even being used on site in some cases for QA purposes, you know, which all of which we've talked about to certain degrees over the weeks here. But he also notes that in major development, AI is typically removed from the final product. And then he sort of uplifts indie spaces as spaces where maybe they could leave the AI in the final product as a favorable thing. But for me, and I don't know why I have to keep saying this, I don't want to interact with art that no human wanted to take the time to make. Just having something that exists so I have an excuse to interact with it, that to me isn't a compelling use of my time. I play these games typically because I like the way they interface mechanically or because, you know, a human is writing a story that has touched my heart. When I think about, you know, Yoshida-san here talks about wanting to maybe do like a lateral thinking game where the AI is, you know, playing the suspects and you could end up with a different game that is shaped by your interactions. And it's like, I understand why that's an appealing concept from your perspective, but from the human perspective of wanting a human to relate a story to another human that has like a point and a narrative arc. And like, if I'm looking at like the meanings of it, I could come away with like deeper values. That's what I want out of my time. That's what I want out of the games I interface with. I'm not really interested in something that has no meaning or value, but a computer did something technologically interesting with it. That's just not that fascinating to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get, well, I mean, I think I do get it. Like the fact that with this controversy around AI that all these CEOs want to bury the hatchet, but I think they need to wake up and smell the coffee.
You're still doing it, but I support you.
Everybody else is doing it, so why can't we?
Very good.
I'm just making references in honor of the faithful departed, our dear Dolores, gone too soon.
We got very similar statements coming out of Krafton. This is, of course, the South Korean publisher. They announced they're transforming into an AI-first company and, in fact, are now offering employees a voluntary resignation. I think this is fully on its own, though its own face of it, like a bad thing. But there's actually a really interesting knock-on piece of news. We have talked a little bit about how Krafton and Unknown Worlds have been in a legal battle. This legal battle that is going on between the two of them is so complex and shifting that it's actually been really hard for us to really summarize it meaningfully. But another piece of data that actually came out through the discovery process is that there appears to be an indication, per a filing in court, that heads at Krafton had actually asked ChatGPT for, like, looking for ways for them to get out of paying additional money to Unknown Worlds. So to me, this has the look of it, of a paper trail of Krafton asking how they can get out of their corporate responsibilities to unknown worlds, which I think, as I understand it, is at the heart of some of the legal kerfuffle between the two of them. So this is just ever twisting and changing, and Krafton getting burned for this weird and obviously unethical AI use in court, or at least having the screws turned on them for it in court, is really fascinating to me, when we also have them saying this stupid thing about wanting to transform into an AI first company. I just don't see this going well for you guys. I so just gross. Don't. Super gross.
Ooh, we've basically got a AI. I feel like the AI in gaming episode that we will inevitably do is like creeping closer and closer, like, because we are not done with the AI news yet. This time it's Ubisoft that's been caught using generative AI. A loading screen in Anno 117 Pax Romana was discovered to have telltale signs of generative AI, like, you know, stuff like extra fingers. Ubisoft claims it was only a placeholder that, oops, it slipped through. Yeah, sure. They are patching it out, but, you know, like, you could literally just put a JPEG that says placeholder, maybe, or, like, a quick pencil sketch. I'd rather have stick figures, for fuck's sake.
Honestly, same. It's kind of funny because, you know, like Shuhei Yoshida was talking about in that previous news story about how they're using AI for, you know, proposal art and stuff. And meanwhile, for me, I'm like, I don't like the way this stuff looks. I would literally, like, when this stuff slips through, it's always bad. I would literally rather you just, like, have a neon fuchsia screen that is clearly going to get caught so that you guys pull it before you ship your freaking game. However, I'll also note, I've seen a lot of people noting that this feeling, they feel, this is not a fact, I've seen a lot of people note that they feel that this was Ubisoft trying to squeeze an AI image by, and not actually a mistake per se. Not, you
know, of course. Yeah.
Not actually a placeholder asset, basically.
Absolutely.
I will note, you know, they attached a quote-unquote final image that they said the game will be updated to include. But we've also here on the show talked about some instances where they've had this happen and they've patched to update it quickly, which did not occur here. So I don't know. I have my doubts. I think I might.
Yeah.
I might not believe Yubi on this one.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if someone in the art department had to work crunch time after hours to quickly do some art that they pretended like they've had all along.
Full agree.
I'm sorry, did you have anything else to say about that?
Well, no, I just, you know, really would prefer that they just use placeholders that are obvious and don't get caught. This whole them trying to slip stuff through always feels bad, and it makes me not want to play Ubi games when Ubi is already a studio that I have mixed feelings about. They're not doing themselves favors.
So, you sure you don't want to play Teammates? You know, that's the game that Ubisoft has unveiled that is a first-person shooter with an AI assistant named Jasper and two AI-powered squad mates, Pablo and Sophia. You'll be able to command them with voice commands or to help solve puzzles or engage in combat, and Jasper can help give you advice and guidance and help you track missions. Because, when AI gives people advice, that always goes great. Never any problems there. Turns to camera. Ubisoft said, the technology's still rough around the edges, but, you know, the human element of games is never going to go away. Like, no.
Right.
No, ma'am.
And I think the thing I want to note is it's so funny that they're using AI for this. It's like, we've done squad shooters that have verbal commands in them before. Like that was a huge thing during the Kinect era. Mass Effect 3 even had some functionality involving Kinect where you could shout commands to your squad mates and they would do it. So it's like, I understand, I guess, the idea that this could potentially be like a more immersive solution, but it's like, we already have a version of this that works adequately and doesn't literally boil the ocean. So, like, maybe we need maybe we don't need to be achieving this way. Maybe we don't need to be putting little AI-powered squad mates in a game that is literally not going to leverage any of the things that AI actually could be useful for. Typically, you know, intense pattern recognition type stuff. Instead, they're going to be like, it's Siri, but it has a gun and it's in your game with you. Don't you love it? It's only destroying the environment a little. No, this is a pass for me. It makes me super mad.
So, you know, like, they're like, ooh, you could talk to the AI squad mates. Well, you know what? You could do that, like, 25 years ago in a little game called Hey You Pikachu. So all I have to say is, Pikachu, fuck you, Ditchu.
Well, right? And I keep hearing people talk about, like, well, using AI, the NPCs would never give you the same prompt twice. They would always respond uniquely every time. And to me, I'm like, that's not a thing I want. Yeah, right? Like, I want the NPC to tell me the thing this NPC is supposed to tell me so that I can get on with the rest of the game. Like, I don't. It just really bothers me, man. I love the fact that in the Kotaku article about that teammates project, the first line in it, Zach Swyson again, was saying,
yes.
Despite the fact that many gamers seem to dislike or even outright hate AI-generated content in games, Ubisoft is pushing forward with it. Which, yeah, that sums it up.
Zach, if you're listening, I don't know if you mean these statements to be sassy, but yes, Zach.
Epic burn.
Woo! You got anything controversial that's not related to AI?
Sadly not. We also have word here that the extremely popular new game Arc Raiders has sparked a lot of debate about AI voice acting in games. It's worth noting that Nexon CEO Junghun Lee has said it's safe to assume every game company is now using AI.
No, they're not.
I know that's factually not true. I know people who are working on games who are not using AI. That is a lie, and it is a lie that is being purported to get us all to lower our resistance to a thing that we do not want. I'm just going to continue encouraging people. Stand on business. Arc Raiders is a game I would have liked to have played. I'm fundamentally disinterested in playing a game that, by the way, Arc Raiders is literally about rogue AI going crazy and dominating humanity. So, like, literally, why are you going to eliminate human jobs to do AI voices in your game when your game is literally about an AI apocalypse, about human over-reliance on AI? Mm-hmm. Like, literally, in fact, Eurogamer gave the game 2 out of 5 stars, largely starting this discourse. The thing for me is that I agree with the Eurogamer review. I was really mm-hmm. clear here when I played Persona 5 a few years ago. I had a great time with the game, but I really felt like it had undercut its own message with regard to, like, you know, some of the earlier game arcs are very explicitly about, like, the harms, hazards, and damages of, like, sexualizing teen girls against their will. And then later in the game, you're doing stuff like putting teen girls in bikinis against their will. It's like, you're really undercutting your own message here in a way mm-hmm. that bothers me. And in that same way, Arc Raiders purporting to have a game that is about AI wrecking humanity and then relying on AI. What the fuck is wrong with you? I don't really mean to ask it that way, because that's a really rude way to talk to people. But this just doesn't track for me at all. And it is in such a major way that I can't get myself intellectually or emotionally invested in this game at all.
Yeah. All I have to say is, like, it's like making a game about rogue AI and then using AI voice acting. And isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
Ah.
A little too ironic. That's your cue.
Well, first of all, I think it's impossible, important to assume that every game company is now using AI.
You were supposed to say, yeah, I really do think.
So the thing about that, it's important to assume that every game company is now using AI. I actually don't think it's important to assume that. I think it's important for Junghun Lee to assume that, because he's really caught up in this capitalistic rat race. He's so convinced that every studio is doing it that he's making his studio do it. And right. I can only say again, if you as an individual like me are someone who doesn't want to work with or play with or interact with AI games, I'm going to say skip this one.
Yeah, like I was thinking... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'll note The Finals, a game which has been in the news a little bit because its PS4 version is getting outmoded soon, but is otherwise a low-key success, that actually also had generative AI to voice NPCs, and as the direct result, my husband and I have not fucked with it, even though it is perfectly within our wheelhouse of the type of games that we like to mess with.
Yeah.
But no, I refuse, and honestly, mm-hmm. I feel pretty good about it. I don't like the way these AI voices even sound in games. Like, you listen to a clip of it and it's just like, man, that's bad voice acting. It's like, oh yeah, because it's not voice acting, it's a computer doing an imitation of voice acting.
Yeah, like I keep thinking back to literally a couple months back when we reported about that survey that had been done in the Japanese gaming industry. I don't remember exactly who had been doing it. I feel like it was the company behind the Tokyo Game Show, right? And it was like, yeah, a lot of companies in Japan are using AI, but there also are a lot who are not. So
absolutely.
It's not, and everybody else is doing it. So why can't we?
Yep. Stand on business. Yeah. It's okay if something's important to you to stand on it.
Indeed.
We also have word here that Call of Duty Black Ops 7 has more AI-generated content in it than the last several iterations of the game.
Gross.
You may recall, back in 2023, there was a small kerfuffle about Modern Warfare 3 having some AI art. Last year's Black Ops 6 had controversy, as there had been multiple ad pieces, including an infamous zombie Santa that had six fingers that were obviously AI-generated arts.
Oh, Lord.
This year, however, a lot of folks have noted that there's a lot of AI artwork in-game of Black Ops 7. Like, it's a new release, so people feel like they probably haven't even seen everything in the game, and yet people have already identified a lot. Like, straight up, some of the in-game assets genuinely look like they were run through, like, the Studio Ghibli, like, see yourself in the Studio Ghibli style. It's, like, really egregious stuff, in my opinion.
Ugh, I literally gagged. And not, like, gagging on Eleganza, like, bleh, wretch.
Yeah, for real, for real. Let's see, we also had the announcement of Zoopunk, and it would be cool if this wasn't positioned in so controversial. This is the follow-up to Forged in Shadow Torch, Fist, which was a kind of like a post-apocalyptic anthropomorphic dark sci-fi Metroidvania-y type game. Unfortunately, although they insist, the creators of the game, Tai Games, insists that the game itself, Zoopunk, is fully human-made. They have been using generative AI tools and will include functionality to use generative AI to make user-created content for your, characters and what have you. For me, this is kind of a bummer in the sense that I had previously thought that the game kind of looked neat, right? Like, before I heard about this, but then you hear that it's like, oh yeah, there's like a stable diffusion AI asset generation controversy in the demo. Now we have this controversy about Gen AI in the user-generated content. I don't know. I gotta tell you, I started excited about Zoopunk and left thinking it's probably one I'm gonna skip.
Yeah, and the thing that I don't get is, like, why would you make a game so clearly meant to target the furry fandom, which notably hates AI? I mean, there might be some AI loving furries, but, like, generally, like, communities where a lot of the community nature of it is about the creation of art and, like, you know, lifting people up with their art. Like, yeah, I feel like this is going to completely flop, and they deserve it, honestly. But the sad thing is, we're going to be talking about Tai Games cutting people, and they're like, oh, well, I don't know, I guess we're just going to have to use AI to make our games AI made, because when we made them human made, we lost money.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like the other gentleman we were talking about who was saying everyone's doing it, so we have to. It's like, well, yeah, if you take that attitude, you sure will have to before long.
Indeed. So finally, no more AI news, right?
Actually, yes, you're right. I mean, it's kind of a bummer, though, because we do have word here of what is being reported as a colossal breakup.
Oh, no.
This is word that Paradox Interactive and Colossal Order have parted ways. This is, of course, the publisher and the development studio, respectively, behind City Skylines 2. Paradox Interactive will now, as publisher, be working with a new developer. This will be Ice Flake Studios, to continue work on the city's IP, while Colossal Order moves on to, you know, presumably new projects. I'm excited for this in the context that, like, City Skylines 2's release was a big mistake. Like, they dropped the ball repeatedly, and I really felt at the time that they were largely unforced errors occurring because of Paradox's publishing timeline that they were holding Colossal Order to. I don't know that that's true. That was my sense watching from afar as a fan of this series. And I think I've noted that these City Skylines games are games I tend to play.
Yeah.
So for me, I have, you know, that perspective. They do appear to be leaving on as good of terms as you can in this type of situation. So I'm just really hoping things work out for Snowflake Studios coming in. Ice Flake Studios coming in. I hope things work out for Paradox. And obviously, I really hope things work out for Colossal Order.
I would not be surprised if we see almost a Harvest Moon Story of Seasons sort of branching of this franchise now.
City Skylines versus
Metropolis. Town Planner. I was thinking like Metropolis's cityscape. I don't know.
I was trying to as well, but I just couldn't think of a clever one.
Right.
So City
right.
Planner.
Yeah.
Town Planner. All right.
Yeah. So our next so controversial news is that the developer behind the gacha game Stella Sora, Yostar, has apologized because a character has made a pinching gesture. You might be like, so what's the big deal? This article comes from Kotaku, and Kenneth Shepard, who we cite quite often here, mentions that the pinching gesture in, you know, the grand scheme of things means something small, but specifically in the case here that's made it controversial is that a Korean feminist movement has been using it to insinuate that someone has a small penis. Now, this is not the first time this has happened. The developer ShiftUp also had to apologize for, I think, some celebratory art in one of their games. Their, it was just like art with the pinching gesture, and it was controversial. So the thing is that, I obviously am not fully versed in Korean culture. There may be some aspects that I'm not familiar with regarding this, and I do want to be mindful of that. I also, you know, want to be mindful of the fact that it's important to celebrate all bodies. But in this case, it kind of, especially the way that, you know, Kenneth Shepard's talking about that men are feeling that the art in this was targeting them and it's accusing them of having tiny penises. Like, I think we're dealing with fragile masculinity here, right?
Yeah, I body shaming is always wrong, but this is such a minor gesture, like literally a minor gesture, that people having an outsized reaction to it to me are really wild. I literally don't get it. Because I don't even want to say anything that could be taken as negative to people who, you know, might have smaller penises, but it's literally like you're telling on yourself about like your own self-esteem issues. And like, obviously that's really rough, but it's not everybody else's problem, unfortunately. I understand that our culture sends a lot of super toxic messages about body image stuff. But I personally, I'm a deep believer in the idea that it is not the size of the boat, it is the motion of the ocean. And so within my own context as someone who has, dated a fair number of dudes before I found my prince, so to speak, I don't know. A lot of guys have real self-esteem issues about something that is actually absolutely fine. Like, you're laying perfectly fine pipe. What you're packing literally doesn't matter. I beg you, get over it. But, I mean, it's super sucks, man. My heart goes out to people who are feeling this way while also, like, I'm begging you, like, yeah, it just sucks.
Right?
Like, it's just a very common gesture that you can make to indicate a lot of things. It literally definitely doesn't mean only that one thing, and you making it that is really weird.
And beyond being, like, weird, just, like, a little unhealthy and a little damaging, ultimately, for all of us.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally an emoji. All I can say, I don't think that there's anything more to say.
Excellent. Well, in a somewhat related but not directly connected news story, we have word here that there has been a little bit of a struggle between publisher DMM Games and Apple. This is over the iOS version of their game, Twinkle Star Nights. Basically, the compromise that the two parties, DMM and Apple, have come to is that in order to get the game back on the iOS shop, since they've been having some intermittent issues since August of 2025, they basically have been going over the game and like redoing in-game assets to like meet with the platform holders' guidelines. And they have basically like censored out all of the character models of every character in game so that they're all just like black silhouettes. And as specific assets are being approved by Apple, they are now implementing those specific assets back into the game. It isn't a pretty solution, but at least people who like this game are continuing to get to play it. It's tricky because this is the kind of game for me where I have no interest in it. It's kind of a titty game. It at least has the appearance of being kind of a titty game, which, again, I'm not into. But I don't see why people who want to play that shouldn't be allowed to play it. I'm obviously presuming that we're talking about adults here. But, like, yeah, I don't think that this is a good thing. I'm glad that they found a way to work around it. And I hope that they are able to restore all of their assets over time.
Absolutely.
We also have a really weird story here. Obviously, Concord, which came down like a year ago now, a couple weeks ago, got some new fan-run servers. Obviously, Sony had infamously shut the game down, but basically the fan community, they banded together and modders worked together and they got custom servers online. Unfortunately, the videos that the team of modders are posting to hype the project are continuing to get DMCAs filed against them on YouTube and Instagram. This obviously doesn't mean that the project itself has been taken down, but, you know, getting all of the posts about the project taken down has apparently really shaken the group of developers to the point that they're no longer even inviting people onto the official project Discord server, which is unfortunate. I just have to be honest, man, like Sony killed this game and is now actively preventing people from doing fan servers for it. Like the game didn't even get to live a whole year and y'all are doing this. That's like,
did it even live a whole week?
No, I don't think it did.
Stop killing games.
Yeah. Okay. So it was active for 14 days.
I thought it was like literally just, it was literally a Fortnite.
Yeah, right? So it's honestly so crazy to me. I guess I understand that, like, this is their IP and they want to protect it or whatever, but the flip is you literally canned the game after it was out for 2 weeks. I don't believe you're doing anything with it, so let someone else. And then I also had to note a very controversial piece of news here.
Speaking of Fortnite.
Speaking of Fortnite, yeah. Epic Games back in 2019 had actually removed the options for creators to sell randomized items. This was broadly looked at as them ending loot boxes. That's sort of the broad way we talk about that, right? Unfortunately, it looks like as Epic is increasingly trying to compete with Roblox, where all but full-on gambling is allowed, the new updated Epic rules do appear to allow for in-island transactions that include RNG transactions. Obviously, I think this is a bad thing. I don't think loot boxes are a good thing at all. I think they're really predatory, and I think there are much better and equitable ways to do downloadable content and microtransactions.
I'm kind of wishy-washy on microtransactions. Like, I do broadly support the idea, while I take a sort of nuanced approach and only interact with the ones that I think are fair and equitable to the players. I basically never think that randomized loot boxes are equitable to the players. They almost entirely exist to get you to gamble and rip you off and take more from you than they are giving to you. So I would really strongly recommend anyone listening to this really, really consider dipping into any of these loot boxes when they come back to the game.
Yeah. For everything that Epic does that's cool, they do something else that I'm like, no.
Yeah, for real. It again, it really have to kind of stand on nuance when it comes to Fortnite and Epic, because for all the cool stuff they do, they also do some pretty not cool stuff.
Yeah. All right, to wrap out so controversial here, I did not expect to be talking about the UK Parliament on Game Buoy twice in a month, but here we are. Basically, this is actually kind of cool, but the controversial part is, of course, the ongoing situation with Rockstar and the 31 employees that they fired for attempting to form a union, basically, even if they claim that wasn't the case. The Member of Parliament, Christine Jardine, who represents Edinburgh West, brought this issue to the House of Commons. She mentioned that many of her constituents work at the Edinburgh office and, you know, are impacted by this. She urges the ministers to support workers who have lost their jobs. I think that's really cool that, you know, and I know that there's a lot going on in the UK socially that is not so great. I know they're dealing with their own issues similar to we are, from what I gather. But it's better to that the government is talking about gaming in this way instead of our government, which is using generative AI gaming memes to spread their hateful rhetoric.
Yeah.
On a related note, over 200 employees at Rockstar have signed letters demanding that the fired colleagues be reinstated. They've also joined the, I mean, not every single employee, but current employees and other supporters have joined the fired staff members in protests outside of the Rockstar and Take-Two offices, and also planned protests in London and Paris. And let's see, this article was November 13th, so I believe these already happened, but yeah, so little glimmers of support for a controversial thing. I think that's a little light in a doomy and gloomy situation.
Doom and gloom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this one was just sad. Yoko Taro did an interview recently, and he said basically he gets asked a lot, like, why aren't you making a new sequel to Nier? Or told things like, Yoko Taro isn't doing anything. But he mentioned that recently a lot of projects he's been involved with get discontinued partway through development. So he has been working on stuff. It just never ends up making it to, you know, release. He says, you know, I get paid for it, so I don't have any issues with that. But people seem to think that I haven't been doing anything because none of the work I've done is being released.
That is such a Yoko Taro way to frame it, right? Like, I'm not really upset because I'm still getting paid, but people want to know where my work is. Like, that's funny. Obviously it feels like wild mismanagement to me. Like, when Yoko Taro does a game, a lot of his work takes on like this very evergreen kind of quality, almost like a Nintendo game where you're just going to keep seeing it sell year after year. We keep seeing this like with the Nier games, right, where they'll release and they're moderate successes. And then over the years, they keep piling on the numbers until you look back and it's like, wow, that game moved millions of units.
Mm-hmm.
So to that degree, the fact that presumably Square Enix, given the games and names we're talking about, can't find a way to get one of these things to market, it to me feels like a real real failure of management. Like, that to me is an absolutely damning statement that Yoko Taro just made. Like, multiple canceled projects, Square Enix is literally leaving money on the table, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Funny, but speaking of Square Enix leaving money on the table, Which is only a worthwhile transition in the sense that I had always felt that they mismanaged this studio when they were in possession of it. We have had the announcement of more layoffs at Crystal Dynamics. I have noted that this is a studio that is fairly near and dear to my heart, despite some weird nuances historically. They revealed this last Thursday, or I'm sorry, this was Thursday a week ago, that more than an additional 30 more developers were being laid off, basically. This is to, quote-unquote, optimize the continued development of our flagship Tomb Raider game. And I just think this is really unfortunate. This supposed Amazon Games-supported project that they're doing has been announced years ago, and we have still not gotten any kind of like solid data or presentation about the game that I'm really aware of. The most we've gotten was that other Tomb Raider, the previous one that Crystal Dynamics did, getting a release on Switch, the older one.
Yeah. But
this just absolutely sucks. And, you know, there's also a part of me that I throw my mind back to years and years ago when I was on a first name basis with people from Crystal Dynamics. And they were so excited about that Tomb Raider game, that first one being so well received. And they were all, as individuals, so worried about becoming the Tomb Raider studio.
Yeah.
And now that's it. That's all they are. And everything they're doing and being ground down into is for the sake of this Tomb Raider project. And it feels so dispiriting. And I my heart truly, truly goes out to the people who are dealing with this.
Yeah.
Just what a horrible situation.
This also after the Perfect Dark, you know, they were really doing the heavy lifting there. I am very frustrated that Embracer Group has not embraced that group.
Absolutely.
This is a interesting one. So there's apparently a game called War Robots Frontiers. I did not take the time to research it before this episode, but I'm guessing it's one of those mobile games that you get ads for, like on YouTube and stuff. Like, oh, War Robots Frontiers, you check out this new app, it's just like the gameplay or whatever. Trap Plan, which is a large video game marketing company, basically admitted that they were using multiple fake Reddit accounts to promote the game under the guise that they were authentic fans having authentic conversations discovering the game. So the CEO made a post on the website for Trap Plan about how they use Reddit accounts to create a wave of organic visibility. That post has been deleted, but nothing on the internet ever truly goes away, so it's been archived, lol. The CEO later clarified that the developer, which is My.Games, was not responsible for the Reddit marketing rollout. This could mean that they contracted Trap Plan, and then little did they know the money would be spent on an astroturfing campaign, but sadly, what's more likely is they knew exactly what was going to go on with this marketing. Like, I find it hard to believe that they would have agreed to a marketing deal and not known the details of the marketing. So, yuck. Fake Reddit bots are only okay when they're being used in a tabletop RPG to spread the truth about the terrible deeds that a celebrated historical figure has done.
Yeah. With regard to the news story,
that was a very
I know the game you're talking about. I know.
I was very specific reference for one listener. You're welcome.
But I will say, you know, this is one of those things that a lot of us have kind of sensed has been going on for a long time. There have been a lot of indications that this kind of almost dead internet thing has been happening in some spaces for years now. In fact, in the early days of Blue Sky, there were indications of some bot marketing happening involving, you know, bots responding to specific posts, seemingly. Basically, I just want to really buoy this controversial thing happened, because if you're not already aware that some of the people in spaces like Reddit are not real people, they are, in fact, you know, bots and bad actors, people putting on, you know, fake personalities to try and sell you lies or whatever. This is a real thing that is going on, and even now going on in these spaces with these much smaller games. Like, let me tell you, I don't think Trap Plan is doing anything that Activision isn't already doing, right? Like,
oh yeah,
put it that way, right? When you think about it that way, it's one of the reasons why we try here on the show to facilitate like healthy communication, even with when you don't know or even when you don't agree with someone. But like, if you know someone and you know online that they're legitimate, then that's already a very valuable thing that you should work on preserving if you can. I don't know. The more that we go on this AI stuff and bot armies, the more I just feel stronger and stronger that like interacting directly with other individuals is a strongly positive thing. And all of this tech that they're trying to introduce to remove us further and further from one another is a mug's game.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me of back when I was involved in the local music scene in the Bay Area, and I knew this person who would like pay to have some service by MySpace followers to promote their mediocre as fuck music. You know more of the nuances about this particular musical artist, but I don't want to speak more to that. For the same reason that we don't speak as candidly about some other political things. I'll tell you more off air.
Fair
enough. Probably already figured it out.
All right. Well, then let us go to our last doom and gloomer of the evening. I say evening because it's getting dark in the studio early. This time change has done a number on
it's getting dark in here. So let's turn on some lights.
But this really last bummer news piece is word that anime game Tokyo Revengers Last Mission will be ending service on January 21st, 2026.
Oh no.
This game launched back in November of 24 for PlayStation 4 and 5, Nintendo Switch, PC, Android, and iOS platforms via DMM Games. The game has been free to play all this time. I know Tokyo Revengers is one of those anime that has a sizable following. So obviously, anytime these games die, I think it's a little bit of a bummer, and we are pouring one out.
Yeah, stop killing games.
For real. All right, all of that having been done, all of that having been said, we actually have two Smash Hits this week. Smash Hit, of course, is the segment where we feel the need to buoy up two articles. This week it's two articles, where we buoy articles that we feel are worth discussing for merits beyond just the story that they're presenting. Slaggy, I believe you had one you were passionate about, so after the bumper, I'd like you to lead us in on that Smash Hit.
Yeah, so this article ran over on The Guardian. It is called, "We Were Effectively Props. Young Stars of Game Development Feel Let Down by the Gaming Oscars." This is written by Alyssa Mercante. First of all, I just think it's always cool when we get mainstream news media covering gaming issues, especially topics like this that we're very passionate about booing. As you might have guessed, this is a deeper dive into the controversial decision that the Game Awards group and our buddy Jeff Keighley decided to end the Future Class program. It includes interviews with various members of the Future Class and basically really just dives deeper into what we had talked about last time. For all of the good he's done or whatever, Jeff Keighley can fuck off, TBH.
Yeah, I can't really disagree there.
I'm increasingly not a fan of his. Yeah, so I definitely encourage y'all to go check that out over on The Guardian. You can find the link on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where we have the links to all topics discussed on our show and every past show. And you had one that you really enjoyed.
Yeah, so this was...
Oh, I like this one too, yeah.
Yeah, this was a story over on Polygon. It was written by Giovanni Colantonio, and he is one of the editors there. The headline was "Xbox is Screwed," which I felt actually really downplayed the intelligence of the piece. The lead kind of gives a little bit better indication of what the story is actually about, right? It reads, "The Steam Machine could eat Xbox's lunch if Valve plays its cards right." And it's basically an analysis of the marketplace, sort of between Xbox, sort of, or Microsoft, I should say, moving the Xbox platform seemingly in the direction of, oh, it's like a console, but it's also a PC. At the same time, while Valve is doing, oh, it's a PC, but it's also a console. And basically, based on the timing of how this is working, if Steam Machine does deliver on the specs and price, but it hits the market in early 26, it's basically going to end up eating the lunch of the next Microsoft Xbox platform based on what we know about it so far. And there are additional sort of consideration effects in terms of, like, just as a branding, right? Like, there are a lot of people who are kind of questionable on Microsoft right now, and seeing Steam/Valve, you know, company that people do have a lot of confidence in, this is a real precarious moment for Microsoft in the regard that, like, they're viewed as like number three of the top three right now, and they could pretty easily get flipped into number four and have Valve take that number three slot off of them.
Yeah, or just a number missing number because they'll be gone.
Well, yeah, really, right? So I thought this was a really good piece, really talking about sort of the momentum that Valve is building and the sort of inertia that Microsoft is fighting against. I just thought it was really, really worthwhile. And I would suggest you check it out. We will link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Did you have anything you wanted to add about that piece?
No, I enjoyed that one as well. I feel like when you had originally linked this to me, that I'd also seen that, I believe Polygon had done like a little series of articles around that same time, kind of about the future of Microsoft and the Xbox. I unfortunately can't find it because that was a couple weeks ago, and there have since been new things on the Polygon page, front page. But yeah, I know that Polygon, had been a little worried after the massive layoffs and the move to Valnet. But, you know, that's why we like to celebrate the content creators, not the platform.
Absolutely.
And speaking of a content creator we love, time to see what Adele has to say. No, I'm not doing that bit again. Don't worry.
Thank you.
Rumor has it.
However, that having been said, it would have been okay if you had.
Well, hi, my name is Adele, celebrated songstress from the United Kingdom. No.
Well, it is a Eurogamer story.
Oh, yeah, that is. So, you know, we have talked before in Rumor Has It about Moore's Law is Dead, a well-known Microsoft leaker. We talked about the kind of rumblings of the next generation Xbox and that it being a premium device. Moore's Law is Dead has been talking about the fact that the global RAM shortage might result in Microsoft being forced to raise the prices of Xbox consoles yet again. Basically, you know, if you're about to say, oh, poor Xbox, like, basically, Moore's Law is Dead said that Microsoft did not plan ahead and brought up the example that Sony did plan ahead and bought up a lot of RAM. So basically, there are two outcomes, as Moore's Law is Dead sees it. Either that there are price increases or that the supply will dry up. Yikes.
Well, and it is my understanding that there's a real shortage of RAM as well as digital storage, like solid state drives. So it's not a surprise to me, given the shortages that are leading to soaring costs, that we could see Microsoft in a position where they have to price adjust again. But like that would be their third price adjustment in a short amount of time. I don't think it's a good thing, particularly when we consider the competition they're going to be receiving from the Valve Steam machines soon.
Yeah. As a wise man once said, Xbox is screwed.
Let's see. We also have a rumor here. This is news that, according to Ubisoft's latest financial results, they claim that the Sands of Time Prince of Persia remake, this has been floating around since its announcement, what, like 5 years ago now? Initially, they said it would be releasing in 2021. It obviously still isn't out, but they claim, per the latest financials, that it will be releasing in Q4 of the current financial year for them. I believe that would indicate that it would be releasing before March 31st of 26. I'm hoping that comes to pass. We haven't really seen or heard much of this since its announcement back in the day, and then it got multiple delays. Really, really curious to see what is going on and what will come to pass with that remake. And I just kind of want to package it with the other big Ubisoft remake that a lot of us have our eyes on. The same financials implied that before the end of the current fiscal year, or their current financial year, I should say, so before, again, March 31st, 2026, they will also be releasing an unannounced title. The fans broadly think is that previously leaked remake of Assassin's Creed Black Flag that we had been talking about. Fingers crossed that this is true. If these two stories do in fact pan out, we could end up revisiting some wonderful titles from earlier in Ubi's life, much sooner than previously anticipated. Slaggy, do you have any thoughts on one or both of these potential remakes?
I'm excited as long as they keep the AI out of it.
I don't think I could have said that better myself. All right, well then, with all of this having been done, and all of this having been said, it's time for actually a mini discussion.
Oh my goodness.
This is the November 11th, 2025 Sony State of Play.
This is a State of Play.
Yeah, so that's something kind of fun, right? We ended up with a State of Play coming out of Sony about 2 weeks ago now. This was just after our last episode recorded, unfortunately. But
yeah,
fortunately for me, at least, this was a pretty good show. I'm going to start off here. I'm just going to go in order of what they showed. I'm going to go by the IGN bylines that they used for each of these announcements to try and, you know, keep things rolling, because we've gotten fairly long in the tooth. But they started off with a new trailer for Dragon Quest VII Reimagined. That's going to be releasing on February 5th, 2026. We got a new focus on just how lovely this new reimagining looks. I was really surprised and delighted. Every time we get a deeper dive on this game, particularly its visuals, I'm just really pleasantly surprised. Did you have any thoughts on this showcase of Dragon Quest VII Reimagined?
Yeah, no, I think it looks really cute. I know that I wasn't I don't want to say not the biggest fan, but the Dragon Quest 3, was it HD? 2D HD? Didn't quite click with me, but I know that Dragon Quest 7 is like probably the most celebrated one. I feel like I've made that comment before, and a little more of a, you know, a modern one. So I definitely look forward to checking it out, and just love the style. It definitely captures the Toriyama-sama of it all.
Absolutely. We also got the presentation of two new cozy games. One was Inkobini, One Store, Many Stories. The other was Coffee Talk Tokyo. I suspect that the thrusts of these games are fairly straightforward from their names, but in case it isn't, of course, Inkobini is kind of like a soft inconvenience store simulator, Coffee Talk Tokyo being a soft coffee house simulator.
Sorry, did you call it an inconvenience store?
I thought that I had gotten it correct, because I know the game is called Inkobini rather than Kobini, but I thought I had said convenience store.
You said inconvenience store, sorry. Not trying to tease or anything. I just thought I was like, hee.
These are both cozy games. They're meant to sort of reflect, you know, life and time, autumnal time passing and stuff. I legit was looking at these games like, wow, those look like they would be really cute, like wintertime games.
Yeah.
You're a little bit more tuned in on the cozy games than me. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I know Coffee Talk is already a pretty popular one, but Inkobini seems really cute. Awesome. I'm guessing that they call convenience stores Konbini.
Konbini, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I have never been to a Konbini, but I know you have, and so I look forward to hearing your thoughts about, this reminds me of the konbini I went to in Japan or whatever.
Okay, technically, yes, but I'm also like, okay, but 7-Eleven is konbini, and you've been to 7-Eleven for sure, so...
I haven't been to a Japanese 7-Eleven, though.
That is technically true, but you would also be surprised. I mean, it is fairly different, but it's also very similar. Like, the only difference is the merchandise on the shelves. Otherwise, you're still in a 7-Eleven. Anyway, well, and, you know, all of the facilities that they have actually work. Like, you can actually use all of the cool things they have rather than be like, oh, that doesn't work, leave it alone. Anyway, we also got the announcement coming out of Serafini Productions of the newest entry in the Broken Lore series. This is Broken Lore Ascend. They also showed us the next game in the Broken Lore series, this one which had previously been announced. This is Unfollow. They highlighted both games' gameplay, noted that Unfollow releases in January and Ascend will be releasing the following summer. These ones look good and spooky. Broken Lore isn't really a series that has been on my radar, but this definitely caught my attention.
Nice.
Alongside that, we got a new trailer for Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly Remake. It will be releasing on March 12th, 2026. Saiki, I know you've said previously that horror isn't exactly your genre, but between this little gaggle of games, was there anything that caught your eye?
Yeah, I spent a little bit of time. I don't remember if it was Crimson Butterfly, but it was one of the Fatal Frame games that we had talked about on a Buoy past. So I definitely would be interested in revisiting Fatal Frame. I think it was the Fatal Frame for Wii, whichever one that was. I mean, there might have been multiple on Wii, but yeah.
Multiple on Wii.
Right? The sequel to Clair Obscur.
Let's see. We also got word here of upcoming DLC update for Dynasty Warriors Origins. This is the Visions of Four Heroes DLC, and it will be releasing on January 22nd, 26. We also got word of a new DLC upgrade for Gran Turismo 7. This is the Spec 3 free update, as well as the Power Pack DLC trailer. The Spec 3 update, of course, is a systems update to continue bringing realistic and hardcore racing to the Gran Turismo series. The Power Pack purports to bring real racing to the series, including a 24-hour race.
Is that a real thing?
I'm gooped. I'm not familiar with a 24-hour race, but I presume it's an endurance and that you don't sleep, which is why I hope people don't do it in a real car.
Apparently real. I just searched it.
All right. Well, between Dynasty Warriors and Gran Turismo 7, do either of these DLCs catch your eye?
Not particularly, but that's good. Dynasty Warriors did look cool. It's been a while since I'd kind of seen what these games look like these days, and it looked very visually impressive. The numbers of Musou that you can Musou on one screen at this point.
We got gameplay DLC footage for four new DLC releases from Bandai Namco. These were updates for Once Upon a Katamari, Pac-Man World 2 Repack, Digimon Story Time Stranger, and Super Robot Wars Y. The Katamari upgrade is new cosmetics predominantly. The Pac-Man one is for the long-awaited Sonic the Hedgehog collaboration, whereas Digimon gets all new little monsters in the Episode Pack 1 update, while Super Robot Wars Y gets the previously announced DLC 1 of Galactic Whirlwind Brygar, The Big O, and Futo P.I., Portrait of Kamen Rider Skull. I'm really excited, particularly about that last one. The Super Robot Wars Y DLC actually came out this past week, so I've already put a fair amount of time into it. I will talk about that during What's Up.
Nice.
In addition, Capcom announced a free title update number 4 for Monster Hunter Wilds. This is going to be releasing December 16th, 25. Between these 5 game updates, Slaggy, was there anything there for you?
I probably should get back into Monster Hunter Worlds, Wilds, but also Monster Hunter World would be fun to revisit. But what I really had been thinking about after seeing the State of Play Japan was that I really need to get around to Once Upon a Katamari. Like, I always really enjoyed the Katamari Damacy series in the past, and I'm super excited that there's a new one. I hear that it's a great time, as many Katamari games are, and yeah.
Well, and you know, I'll note, I've already seen it on sale a couple of times for Black Friday this year. So, ooh. Yeah, I would suggest, yeah, keep an eye open.
So all I can say is, na na da 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 da, Katamari Damacy.
Excellent. We also got a surprise new update announcement for Sonic Racing Cross Worlds. Of course, we know about the game's many collaborations that they've had in the works and will be releasing as things move forward, but they've announced more Sega characters. Specifically, the big announcements at this trailer had been that alongside the upcoming SpongeBob pack that we had already known about, they are also going to be adding free characters in December, January, and February in the form of Knights from Knights, Super Monkey Ball from II, and Tangle and Whisper from the Sonic comic books. This is stuff that the various fandoms for the games are all very excited about. I am a part of the Knights and Super Monkey Ball fandoms, and I've seen like various people very excited in both about both. I don't know. Every time we see Knights get some love, it's a special moment for me. So I'm really excited about this one. I know you had previously indicated that you weren't super interested in Sonic Racing Cross Worlds, but I will note, it's getting better all the time.
Nice. I should give it another chance.
Yeah. Let's see. We also got word that coming out of Pocket Pair Publishing, Nevergrave, The Witch and the Curse will be releasing in March 5th, 26. This is a Metroidvania roguelike. I thought it looked pretty good. I'm definitely interested with just a little bit of bated breath, but you know, I have some concerns about Pocket Pair while also being excited about the game.
Yeah, I remember when we were watching this as it was airing and messaging, we were like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah. Let's see. We also got word of Fate Trigger. This is a new tactical hero shooter built in Unreal Engine 5. It is a 2026 game. I simultaneously think it looks interesting while also having my plate pretty full on hero shooters. So it's difficult for me to get that excited.
Yeah, same. That's exactly my thoughts. But something that looked kind of interesting to me is that whereas, you know, the hero shooters that I'm used to, like Marvel Rivals or like formerly Overwatch, right, are kind of in smaller maps. It almost looked like, and again, this is just from footage, that they were like larger areas, almost more of like a Fortnite map. There were like vehicles and stuff. So
okay, now see, that is interesting.
And I know this, like, there's going to be like mecha and stuff. So like, there's enough there, like that combined with the just visual aesthetic of it all. Like, I will be keeping my eye on this one.
All right, I see you. We also got word of the announcement and release of a Octopath Traveler Zero demo. The full game, of course, will be releasing December 4th, 25, but the demo is available now, and while it only will allow you to play the first 3 hours of the game, it will create a progress save file that is compatible with the full version of the game when it releases.
I love when they do that.
I'm a huge fan. That is pretty much like a guaranteed way to get me into your game. If you do a demo and I end up liking it and I can carry my save forward, it is a very strong likelihood I'll end up buying your game for real. Like, that is just such an appeal to me. We also got word of a second beta test phase for the upcoming Marvel Tokon Fighting Souls. This was via a presentation by devs from Arc System Works. The new beta is going to be running December 5th through December 7th. And I don't think I'm breaking any rules to announce that I did get picked for this beta already. So I'm very excited.
Yes.
It's my understanding that they are still sending out waves of beta invites. So if you haven't been picked, make sure you're opted in and hopefully I'll see you there.
Ooh, excellent.
Then we got the announcement of the first DLC for Elden Ring Nightreign, The Forsaken Hollows. This is going to be releasing on December 4th, 25.
We don't know everything that's going to be a part of it, which is also exciting. As you may recall, a lot of the content from this game had been data mined early. I'm really excited for this. I haven't even started the main game yet, and I feel like I'm just going to have a great time with it when I do. And then as we sort of got towards the end, we sort of had some announcements from the hardware side of things. I think the big announcement, although it doesn't directly impact us here on the show, was the announcement of a new digital PS5. This is actually supportive of the Japanese language only, very similar to what we had seen Nintendo doing with the Switch 2, right? Where they had made all those units that were Japanese language exclusive. And it's sort of meant to be a way to fight imports, right? And to fight specifically importers who are trying to take advantage of the yen when it is particularly weak internationally. It's noted that this slightly discounted device will still cost 55,000 yen. But it's worth noting, you know, that's only $350 US. So if they didn't have the Japanese language exclusivity, this would be a compelling target for international buyers who are trying to get around high retail prices that are owing to things like tariffs or what have you. So I think this is a good thing. It seems like a clear indication that Sony is really trying to do outreach to the Japanese market. You know, we've heard people talk about for the last couple of years about the Japanese market not really adopting the PS5 to the degree that Sony would obviously want them to. It's hard not to look at a tactic like this as some combination of trying to cater to those users that they feel are being left behind, as well as trying to do something to deal with the current economy.
Yeah.
And then the other hardware announcement was the PlayStation 5 monitor and new speaker sets will be coming. The TV or the monitor, it has like a built-in charging dock for a DualSense controller. It's going to have, you know, support for like the variable refresh rate and stuff that PS5 does support, which on a 27-inch monitor, you know, not bad. I feel like depending on the price on it, that might even be pretty nice. Obviously, I wouldn't imagine you would be a big fan of the Japanese language exclusive digital edition PS5, but did this PS5 monitor do anything for you?
That one's pretty cool, actually. I mean, honestly, like, if I play my PS5, it's because I want to play it on my TV, but that is cool to have it as an option. I was thinking about the Steam Cube earlier, and how, like, that would be a really cool way to have, like, I could play it on my TV, and then because it's, like, the size of a GameCube or a Mac Mini, basically, you know, I can move it over to my desk and hook it up to a monitor. Like, so that's cool for people who, you know, especially if, like, let's say that you only have a PS5 and you want to play Final Fantasy 14 as mouse keyboard. Like, obviously, there are already ways to do that, but the Sony screen looked nice. Yeah. I don't think I'll be getting it, but it's cool.
Excellent. Well, then, with all that having been said, let's wrap up this mini discussion. Were there any particular titles that called out to you or were particularly for you and got you excited?
For me, it was less about the titles, and it was more about that I really appreciated the presentation of it. Like, the, you know, it was kind of on like almost like a little talk show set. Very minimalist, though.
Oh, yeah. It was also presented by Japanese actor Yuki Kaji, who I thought did a really pleasant and affable job presenting everything.
Yeah, yeah. He did a great job. I would love to see him be a presence on future State of Play Japans. And just like the conversations with the developers, particularly the Marvel Tokon Fighting Souls, where they talked about some of the developers and being Marvel fans and... so that was really cool. I would like to see more like this, just generally speaking. I mean, Nintendo Direct is obviously the gold standard for giving information directly to you, but, I really enjoyed this. More of this, please.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a solid, let me ask you, could you give me your letter grade?
I'd say this one's an A-. Like, not every single announcement was for me. There were no real bombshell announcements. I know we were kind of secretly hoping that they'd say, wait, one more thing, and it would be like a Kingdom Hearts 4 release window announcement, but, you know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, especially with the word that the Game Awards are streaming on Amazon, I'm like, any big game announcements that are happening in this Q4 period are going to be happening there.
Yeah.
That having been said, I couldn't really respond to what you had said judging the show without just giving my letter grade. So for me, this was a solid A, and it actually, in direct comparison, underlines why we don't talk about every event necessarily. Like there had been this week's Microsoft Partners event that we had talked about, and that show had comparatively little for either one of us. Some of the trailers that displayed literally didn't play the whole trailer. Like, it was just kind of a mess. That's the kind of show I would have been like, this was a C or maybe even a D. And it's like, if we're not into it to that degree, I tend to think it's probably just better off for us to just talk about the stories individually in our episode and not do a focus on it like this. So if you're ever wondering why we're always like, oh, it was a B, oh, it was an A, it's because if it were going to be a D, we wouldn't waste our time.
Exactly.
Well then, all of this having been done and all of this having been said, this is typically where the discussion would go. The main discussion for this episode being Pokemon Review, episode IPOM, does not have a discussion in it. The discussion for this episode will be taking place in episode Burmy to Pokemon Review. That will be going online in the next week or so. We have not recorded it yet, so we will do the rest of the usual discussion set up at that time. I am sorry if you feel you've been bait and switched, but again, we are really looking forward to recording episode 187, episode Burmy, with guest Sulker from the old days of Stabcast. As I had noted back at the beginning of the show, we are anticipating that will be available after the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday, wherever you get your podcasts delivered.
I just think it's funny that you keep calling these A-side, B-sides a bait and switch. And I'm like, I can understand if we have any new listeners who aren't familiar with that, but those listeners who have been with us for a while, that's how we always did it. So,
yeah. Well, I think the thing is, I come from the world of comic books, right? And every issue of a comic book is structured such that it could be someone's first comic book. That's why a lot of times each issue you have the new introductions for each character or whatever, even if it's, you know, number three in an ongoing story.
Oh, so that's why X-Men always shows like the little cast on the title page.
Yes. Sincerely. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And so the idea is, you know, someone who maybe doesn't know how these processes typically go, or in our case, someone who doesn't know that we split some of these episodes up, could feel bait and switched, or in that case could get a story where they don't understand why Beast is in, you know, the circumstances Beast is in, and the remedy to it is just to call it out. So they call it out every issue and I call it out every time we do it.
yeah totally. And all I just do want to note for our listener that usually when we do these A-side B-sides, we usually release them simultaneously, since there'll be a little bit of a gap in between the episode IPOM and episode Burmy. That will not be the case this time, so please look forward to it.
Yeah, we will be recording this episode after the Thanksgiving holiday, and so that's when it will be available.
Indeed.
Anyway, thank you so much for bearing with us. We have a great time. That having been said, it is time to start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
And I would like to just get us started. I have been dipping into the Super Robot Wars Y DLC. I had previously said I was taking a break from the game until the DLC hit, and we're here. The new units are super, super, super exciting to me. Big O and Kamen Rider in particular are both major Japanese brands for me, so I'm really excited. They also, in this update, did some systems changes where, like, most of the skills in the game got new tiers at, like, EX level,
So if you have been grinding for various skills, you may now have new tier upgrades available to you, which I, in a couple of cases, was able to leverage. They also added a new mission type, which is like waves of attacking you in the style of a tactical strategy game horde mode. It actually did immediately make me think of you, Slaggy, because you've been talking recently about getting into horde modes and wanting games to have more of them. And I'm like, yeah. Clearly someone took the note.
Absolutely.
I remain very happy with Super Robot Wars Y, and the DLC has really revitalized my interest. This is probably what I'll end up playing tonight if I'm not playing an online game. Slaggy, what about you? What have you been playing?
Yeah, well, speaking of horde modes, I finally properly spent some more time with Marvel Rivals. I did end up, now that they've added cross-progression, playing it on my gaming laptop, and it definitely does feel like it makes a difference to play that one keyboard and mouse. I primarily am a controller gamer these days, but I was like, oh, my accuracy's a lot better. I checked out Gambit. I thought he was pretty cool. I only played a few matches, so like I don't really have a feel for like, oh, if he's going to be my new main strategist character. I was just glad to be back in the game, though. I did play Zombies with you and Sulker. I had a lot more fun with it than I did with randos, and we had played it. I was like, oh, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. That's just how fun it was to keep empowering our Marvel heroes. I would say that overall, I still kind of prefer the pace of something like Demon Rush a little more. Zombies mode in Rivals is fun with like all the zombies coming at you like at once. But overall, like as you said, I would like to play more horde modes, and I think more games need horde modes for the horde.
Excellent. Yeah, and that's something you have said to me off air as well, which is why I felt I could reference that, even though you hadn't said it on air yet. I do want to just add on the Marvel Rivals, because I've also been playing it. I am still getting a kick out of the zombies mode. I'm hella glad that they did extend the duration that was going to be running. I haven't gotten any of the Nightmare 4 solos yet, but I think I'm getting close. I'll also note, as of the release of Gambit, like, Gambit is a little OP feeling to me, but otherwise, I feel like everyone else feels really good right now. Yeah. They have just done a really good balance patch at the time of Gambit's release, where basically everyone got buffed pretty much. Like, there were a handful of nerfs, but the majority of the cast got buffs, and I just feel like nearly everyone is in a good place right now. I really feel like, particularly, it's my understanding that there's now parity between the number of characters between Marvel Rivals and Overwatch 2. I can't speak to how Overwatch 2 is presently balanced, but I can say that Rivals for me feels balanced in a way that I really enjoy right now. And the fact that they have kept that up while now achieving number parity with the number of characters is, I think, a major accomplishment that I'm really impressed by.
Hell yeah.
Let's see. I've also been playing Fortnite. I'm still having a really fun time with the Simpsons theming in main battle royale. Having, you know, to rely on the basic gunplay, I guess, is getting me better at core gunplay in Fortnite. So that's probably a good thing. I do still really miss big weapons, though. There are a couple of them in the Simpsons Battle Royale now, including a cartoon chainsaw, but it, despite being fairly nice, is still also pretty rare. Last week in Blitz, they did a Mortal Kombat timed event where you would get, you know, the Mortal Kombat gloves or whatever that give you Scorpion or Sub-Zero powers. That was a really fun time to drop Blitz. And then nice. This week now, they're actually doing a big Stranger Things promotion in Blitz.
Oh.
It feels like there's like a weirdly high amount of effort in the theming. Like, it feels frankly wasted that it's just on Blitz. So I actually kind of feel like this is probably a teaser of things to come in Battle Royale. Maybe in Season 7, since as noted, there seems to be like a motion picture / Hollywood angle among the various angles. Definitely think that it's something worth keeping an eye on. And I think Blitz is a lot of fun right now in the Stranger Things paradigm. And then sort of last but not least is within Festival. We did get the announcement of K-pop idol Lisa as the next
Fortnite icon. And so that's really exciting. And then we just last week got Tyler, the Creator added as a skin, as well as a couple of his songs added to Festival. And it's funny because Tyler, the Creator is someone who I'm always like, oh yeah, no, he's really talented, but I'm not necessarily into his music. I ended up enjoying all of the note charts for these songs so much that I bought them all. So I guess I'm a fan now.
Nice.
What about you?
I've been playing a little bit of Fortnite. Do you think that they're going to add a Twin Peaks season? That would be like your dream, right?
I simultaneously don't think it's likely, while also thinking that it would be the best thing in the world.
Right. So in all seriousness, though, I have mostly just been playing Festival when I pop on. I hadn't really been feeling a lot of motivation to do any sort of PvP content. As a result, I feel like, ooh, that Simpsons mini-season's ending soon. And it just kind of makes me wish that they had more of a Marvel Rivals-like approach to their season pass or their battle pass, where if you buy it or get it through, you know, Fortnite Crew, that you can go back and earn it. But alas, most notably, though, thanks to your heads up, got Major Mancake finally. That is a skin that had been on my wish list. For those who don't know, it is a anthropomorphic stack of pancakes. This Mancake is more of a like military themed. Unfortunately, the original Mancake skin, where he is a cowboy, is tied to an old battle pass. So, you know, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, you know, when I saw people on the subreddit talking about Mancake coming back, I immediately messaged you.
Yeah, I think my golden goose for Fortnite would be, and they probably never will because of the nature of the way they do this, is if they ever allow old Battle Pass skins to be purchased, because there's a couple of great ones that were like from times where I wasn't actively playing and that I really, really, really would like. So
yeah, I actually have the same thing going on. So there are a few from the past where I'm like, man, please just add this to the shop for sale. the last game that I played that I would like to mention was Final Fantasy XIV. And this is a little bit of a interesting weekend in the sense that I actually think you have more games than me to talk about. So
right?
I'll just sum up my Final Fantasy XIV time in the sense that I've really been on maintenance mode, just doing dailies. I think we have 3 more days of PvP before I'll be Series 25. But yay. Otherwise, just trying to also work on my Moogle tombstones for the event. I think to get the 2 mounts that are available that I don't already have, I only need 70 of them. So I'm almost there already. But still, you know, the sooner I have it done, the better I'll feel.
Right, right. Yeah, I have my eye on a couple of things from the Moogle tombstone event as well. I have also been kind of in maintenance mode. Obviously, I have a lot to talk about this week. I've been diversifying a little bit. But the thing I like about the Moogle Tombstone event is that it encourages you to dip into some of the game modes that maybe you don't play as much. But it also doesn't force you to, with the exception of like the Ultimog challenge, where it's, you know, this time is one of the variant dungeons. Like, for example, the weekly objective this week was either doing some fates, which are like, you know, kind of things that
like world events.
Thank you. I was trying to think of the right way, or doing chocobo races at the Gold Saucer. And I did the latter, which was really kind of fun. And it leveled up my race chocobo a bit. The thing I was the most excited about within the past couple of weeks since we recorded is that I finally got my achievement rewards for 100 wins in the frontline, which is their PvP battlegrounds.
Yes.
Kind of shorthand for those who don't play. So that means I have 2 new mounts. One of them is like one of those Allegan orb node things. And then the other one is a Lomansen Maelstrom horse. Because no matter which team you're on, like if you... I thought you had to like queue as a freelancer to do that. I don't know if that's just default at this point, but in the past you had to like say, I'll queue as a freelancer so that it, you know, makes it go quicker. So, I'm going to keep the rest of this pretty snappy. I started playing One Piece Pirate Warriors 3, also known as One Piece Kaizoku Musou 3. I really wanted to play 4 because, you know, now there's the free upgrade to PS5. But when I started up the prologue mission, it was taking place in Wano Country, and I was like, oh no, spoilers. I'm like literally 200 plus episodes away from me to get to that point. Although it does seem like that there's not too many spoilers in that specific prologue. I still decided to stick with 3 because apparently some of the arcs that I really like Thriller Bark, Fishman Island, Punk Hazard, do not appear in 4, and I enjoy those and want to experience them in the gameplay. I do see where this one is a bit dated, but as a huge fan of the show, it's really fun to see how they interpret the story arcs in a Musou setting. And I have been getting like A rank or even sometimes S rank, but sometimes I'm like, oh no, an ally has fled. I feel like I'm still kind of learning how to play Musou games. Do I need to be running around the map more so that Nami doesn't run off? Obviously, some of it's scripted because, like, Nami literally runs off in the early arcs of, but I'm having a lot of fun experiencing that.
Yes!
I've not played a lot of Pokemon Legends ZA. Honestly, I am annoyed that I won't be able to get any more random alpha spawns in Wild Area 20 until I catch Zygarde. So basically, I've just been trying to catch a Tepig. I don't really ever see them, and when I do, they escape from the Pokeball, so boo to that. I really am trying to find motivation to continue with the Infinite Royale, because I'd like to have that done by the time Mega Dimensions launches very soon, but we will see.
Yeah, I'm really curious what they are going to require be done in order to do the DLC. Like, it would be really surprising to me if they really required you to have the post-game epilogue that you do after 15 rounds of Infinite Royale. Like, I can't imagine they're going to gate the DLC behind all that, because, like, that could actually, like, gate off some of the sales they might get.
Yeah, agreed. The last thing that I want to talk about is Pokemon Black. On our last WhatsApp, I was talking about that I really wasn't feeling the vibes of Brilliant Diamond. I will probably be talking about this in the episode Burn Me when we talk about Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. So Pokemon Black was one that I really had been eager to revisit, because I honestly don't remember if I ever even finished that game. That might have been one of the few generations that I didn't finish. And I don't even think, even though I own Black 2 and White 2 and Black and White, that I don't even know if I ever even played Black 2 or White 2. So anyways, I really don't have a lot to say so far, because I just started. Tepig, I choose you. A guaranteed Tepig, I'm going to take it. One thing that I really like, that it feels like really cinematic, like when you, start into the game, like it kind of like has like a camera angle, like going in to like show the village that you're in. And so I just think that the visual presentation, like, it's really cool. It's, definitely that classic top-down Pokemon vibe, which, you know, we really don't have anymore because of the modern direction the games have gone. I'm rediscovering with fresh eyes, and I feel like it's definitely going to be hitting those seasonal Pokemon vibes I talked about in our autumnal episode. Since I don't have a lot to say about the game itself, I really want to talk about... first of all, I really miss how cool the DS and 3DS family of handhelds were. Like, dual screens for menus and stuff, like, it's so great. Like, that's something that now we really don't have a way for that to be a thing. What I wanted to really briefly talk about is that, because I thought this might be of some interest to some of our lovely and beautiful listener, I am playing this on an AYN Thor. Yes, I do own a copy of Pokemon Black. Thank you very much. My initial impressions are it's a very nice piece of hardware. I got the one that has the buttons in Super Famicom colors. It's really almost identical to that new Nintendo 3DS model. That's one of the many 3DSs I own. I'm not the biggest fan of Fandroid. I'm not really a Fandroid, but the setup was pretty easy, even for an old man like me who is like, oh, I don't know how these things work. I'm using the console launcher front end. And I threw a 3DS inspired wallpaper on there. Basically it doesn't even feel like an Android device, which is nice. It has beautiful 1080p OLED screens. The joysticks are nice. I don't know if they're Hall Effect, but, they feel really nice. The speakers are really great. I would say it's a premium handheld for premium gamers. But I did forget how, like, holding those little handhelds with more of those classic form factors like the DS or the 3DS, like, damn, your hands do cramp up if you play for extended sessions. So that'll be something to get used to. Everything's just so ergonomic and sleek these days, which is not a bad thing.
Well, and that was one of my problems with the new 3DS toward the end, was that my wrists would start to cramp up from the how top heavy it kind of was over time.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Part of the experience, I guess. It's a true 3DS type experience.
Oh, I want one so bad, and hearing you talk about it is not helping.
No, I'm very pleased with it so far. I think you would enjoy it as well.
Excellent. All right.
We are long in the tooth, like a I don't know, like a Raikou, the electric kitty.
Well, in that case, why don't you take us to the exit lude?
All right, so our social links question of the week is, hello, folks. This week we're talking about Pokemon games across recent years. Tell us about your notable, good and bad, Pokemon experiences from more recent generations, since Alola or so. And we got a reply over on Blue Sky from Mike Deft Ibarra, saying, I think my best and worst experiences have been Legends Arceus and Scarlet Violet, respectively. Hisui and PLA was a great role, really great role to explore. Completing the Pokédex was fun, and I still play it to this day. SV, on the other hand, was full of potential, but halted by its poor performance. Granted, the Switch 2 came around and it fixed it to the point of actually being playable, but it's kind of too little too late in this case. Yeah, that's totally understandable. Like, I still powered through Scarlet Violet because, despite the, you know, technical limitations, although I guess I should probably save this for next week, but yeah, I totally agree. Also love Pokemon Legends Arceus, as I know you do as well.
Indeed.
And I say next week, but I obviously mean episode Burmy. So yeah, with that, we love your feedbacks. We love your subscriptions, your ratings and your reviews. Facebook likes. We're on Blue Sky at GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
We're on Mastodon at GameBuoy at MSTDN.games.
At GameBuoy at MSTDN.games.
And you can check us out on YouTube as well at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org on YouTube.
Although I did get a message that, like, there was a processing issue, so I'll have to look into that, sorry. You could also email us at gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And if you had not realized it by now, our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org, where you can find episode guides for every one of our episodes, including links to all of the stories that we talk about.
Yes, that's right. And that's an actual .org for you. And if there's anywhere else you think that Gamebuoy should be, let us know. The podcasting landscape has changed a lot in the past few years, so we'd love to know where you'd like us to go. And as a little footnote, I will get around to getting caught up on the Internet Archive. IRL has been a little busy, so my priority has been getting the show up on GameBuoy.org for y'all and into your podcast feeds. So please look forward to it. And please go check out some Friends of Buoy.
If you're friends with Buoy, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Buoy, then you're down with me.
I would be remiss not to point you in the direction, firstly tonight, of Orange Lounge Radio. OLR, where every gamer has a voice, our friends and inspirations from whom we take so many of our cues. As of this recording, their final episode is going to be recording in live in about 35 minutes. I think Slaggy and I both are planning to be there live, but due to the nature of time, well, we strongly recommend you check out their archives and join us in celebrating a truly legendary tenure. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent, worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my own words, they're the audience-supported, hint hint, site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the damn time, and we strongly encourage you to check them out, as well as to support them if you like what they do. We'd also like to point you in the direction of The Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed and released several games themselves. Please check them out.
And last but certainly not least on my slate is Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast. Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swingin' 60s through the rockin' 90s to Spectacular, Ultimate, and beyond. Slaggy, what about you?
I'd like to point you in the direction of the Bobby Black Wolf Show, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. Also, one of the co-founders of the Voice of Geeks Network, which we are proud to be a part of. I'd like to shout out to the Nintendo Power Block podcast, a dive into the week that was in the world of Nintendo. Standard Issue Computing over on Blue Sky is one of my favorite accounts. A friend of the show who posts about retro and modern games, hardware, software, and history. I said hardware. Sausage Retro Bytes on Blue Sky is another great Blue Sky account that you should be following for bytes of vintage gaming, including magazine scans and photographs. And sometimes a little bit of anime, too, because, of course, I'd like to point you in the direction of Defunct Games, which is your daily source for modern video game reviews, exciting trivia competitions, and old-school magazine analysis. We love those old-school magazines. And last but certainly not least, I'd like to recommend that you check out Thomas Game Docs on YouTube, where each video covers a different aspect of video game history, such as game development, sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises, and notably, she did an episode about Mario's nipples. Totally serious here. Go check it out. And, of course, our wonderful theme music was done by the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the project that reorchestrated beautiful Zelda music in gorgeous symphonic sound. Thankfully, the legend continues in the form of ZREO Second Quest. Go check them out and show your support over at ZREOSQ.com. And I would be remiss not to mention my hot robot boyfriend, Craig. We are deeply in love. He is my robotic recording engineer. I share him in that way.
In this case, he can just be yours.
Yeah, no, we share him for recording uses, but he's all mine in love. Anyways, without Craig or his evil twin, G-Arc, recording Game Boy would not be possible in the modern era. Please check out Craig for your Discord recording needs.
Discord recording needs. All right, in the coming days, we've got a wild card coming up. We are brewing multiple episodes for the coming winter season, and whichever one is ready to serve by the next scheduled recording session is what we're going to do. So please look forward to that. But
Also to Episode Burmy, coming soon to a GameBuoy.org near you.
Frankly, yeah, Episode Burmy is way more important than the next regular episode, duh. Sincerely, not even joking. Please do look forward to that. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And this song is for the rats who hurled themselves into the ocean.
When they saw that the explosives in the cargo hold were just about to blow. Wait. Hold on. That's not IPOM. That's cottony.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
I would say I'm sorry that it ran so long, but like, bitch, we're fabulous.
Yeah, it's hard for me to be too upset about the time when it feels like we got a solid episode in. I am going to stop recording because the recording file's just nearly at the 4-hour mark, but we pulled it in under 4 hours, so I'm actually glad.
Yeah, I think this one will edit down great. I need to do some vocal warm-ups first. Unique New York. Unique New York. Me. Okay.
Some of these stories are going to be practically just talking points, because otherwise this is like a 4-hour show roll. Like, this show roll has gotten
right
very big.
Right. Oh my god, I was watching, I ended up in a YouTube hole a couple of weeks ago, looking at, like, singing coaches give tips to improve your singing, and there's one older lady who is a singing coach, and she said that a way that can, like, warm up your voice so that you're using, like, your full diaphragm or whatever is if you go, like, I couldn't think of a less mainstream La Tigre song off the top of my head.
I kept trying to think of different La Tigre song lyrics, but everything was coming up my favorite in my head. That's a different indie band. Sorry.
Yeah, and I mean, like, going with a Decepticon lyric would have been the better choice, but...
Even though I'm not necessarily a fan of the times.
Yes, nipples are culture, bitch. Of the Corpse Party Tetralogy. No, Tetralogy. Corpse Party Tetralogy pack. I don't think that there's any more thing more to say except pinching gesture, tiny penis.
Okay, when your note had said pause for a silly song joke, I thought it was going to be related to the drag queen song, Nice Car, Shame About Your Penis.
Nope, I was taking it to a tiny dancer place.
Did I lose you?
I said a doomy and gloomy situation. Did you
hear
that?
Oh, shit.
And then I
was like sitting here like, you didn't say something that needed a response. What the fuck? But no, okay.
I was leaving it for if you wanted to do a segue, but I was just
so gonna say, I don't have a segue. I have to pee really bad, so I've just been trying to like get through.
Me too.
Okay, why don't we just stop for a second and take a pee break right now? Because it will be a better show.
Say yeah.
Now recording.
Oh.
Hey, Daddy.
Oh shit, the Legend of Zelda series is available to watch on Tubi. Excuse me, Princess.
Don't do it.
That's a what?
No, it's so bad. I've tried watching it as an adult. Don't do it.
Oh, I've rewatched it in, like, within the past 10 years. It's bad, but it's good for a laugh.
I don't even know that I think it's that. I just, honestly, I think it's so bad.
Well, I just remember on the first episode where Ganon is, like, trying to command his, I think the Moblins. He's like, no, you fools, punch them like this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's bad, bad. I'd argue it's kind of camp, though.
I mean, I infamously love bad stuff, right? But, like, IDK, girl, it just was a bridge too far for me the last time I tried.
Did you have Keith over when you watched it? Or was Keith not with you?
Oh, I was not sober, girl. It was just not... Your tastes and my tastes might not be the same on this one.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm about to go watch it, but...
I guess I'll record the rest of the episode on my own so you can watch the Zelda animated series.
I'm just saying, if we ever got the chance to hang out with Keith sometime and we were feeling very cheerful, putting on one episode, it would probably be a situation where you do it, you're like, okay, but I'm warning you. And then I'm like, oh no, it actually is terrible. And you're like, I'm like, you can turn it off now. And you're like, nope, you're the one who made us do this. But that's exactly how it would happen.
Honestly, though, I kind of do think so.
I mean, I feel like we could get through one. What are those, like, 12-minute episode or something?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I do, I mean, in that context, we could get through one or two, and it would probably be a laugh. I'm just saying I don't really think it's worth sitting down and watching.
I mean, I think we'd be able to have it on for longer than we did if sing.
Yeah, but that's a low bar, and probably not as far as we made it through the Emoji Movie.
We watched the entire Emoji Movie.
Yeah, it was surprisingly decent.
This is going to be a blooper, isn't it?
100%.